Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Go For It. I am your host, Paul Gannon. For the next 2 hours, we will be talking sports and having fun doing it. And I want all your ideas, all your opinions, and all your beliefs. And of course, as always, you will get a heavy dose of my opinion. If you have an opinion, the number to call, 646-727-3070. That's 646-727-3070. And you can listen to the show at blogtalkradio.com/pgant. That's blogtalkradio.com/pgant. And you can send messages to the show on Twitter at GoForItGant. And while you're there on Twitter at GoForItGant, make sure you give me a follow on Twitter at GoForItGant. Expected today to be joined by Houston Texans wide receiver Brian Johnson, who's going to stop on by, talk about his foundation, talk about his season, and talk about his plans as he's entering free agency now. He signed a one-year deal with the Texans, and now he is a free agent. So we're going to talk to Brian about that. We're also going to be joined by Martez Wilson of the New Orleans Saints, and we're going to talk to Martez and Brian all about the combine, get their thoughts and their how they felt about the combine and how the combine treated them and what they learned from it and their experiences. And also we're going to talk to Martez about his season and what he's going to do next season to become a better football player for the New Orleans Saints. And also we're going to be joined by the newest enshrinee to the Pro Football Hall of Fame, the one, the only, the great Willie Rofe. We're going to get his thoughts on basketball, and we're going to get his thoughts on some of the things going around the National Football League and his experience with the NFL Combine, which was many years ago for him. It's a totally different ballgame now than it was when Willie Rofe was involved with the Combine. So we're going to talk to Willie Rofe, Martez Wilson, and Brian Johnson. So make sure you stick around. We got a great show planned for you. And I want to start now with one of the biggest stories of the week, and that was the whole situation with Ryan Braun and how his 50-game suspension initially, he tested positive for some kind of performance-enhancing drug, and it was reported that he tested positive, and he was about to get a 50-game suspension, but this week that suspension was overturned by an arbitrator, and he overturned it, and now Ryan Braun will not get suspended. And now Ryan Braun is a free man in some respect in terms of suspension and in terms of people saying that he is a guy who is dirty. The reality is now you can say, I mean, and judging by this story, and this is a story with a lot of layers to it, I mean, essentially Ryan Braun and his team, what they argued was, in a lot of ways, a technicality. And they argued that the sample – which was collected on October 1st, was not delivered in proper time to the lab in Montreal. Now, according to the baseball bylaws, a sample is taken. The day the sample is taken, it must be sent to the lab that same day. Well, the sample was taken on a Saturday, and it was not taken to a lab, or not taken to FedEx, excuse me, to mail off to a lab until Monday. So that's 2 days there. That's 2 days there. And in a lot of ways, that's why Ryan Braun will not be suspended 50 games, because Major League Baseball and the people who do the testing for Major League Baseball did not get the sample to the lab in a timely manner. They did not get the sample to the lab in a timely manner. And so with that being said, the arbitrators ruled in favor of Ryan Braun, and now Ryan Braun, who once was dirty or once was considered dirty a few months ago, is now in some respect considered clean. He is considered clean. He is considered clean. And a lot of people aren't happy. Major League Baseball is not happy. Travis Tigard, the CEO of the U.S. Anti-Doping Agency, is not happy. He was quoted as saying this is a real kick in the gut to clean athletes. He actually said gut kick to clean athletes. This is basically a kick in the gut for clean athletes. And he went on to say, to have this sort of technicality of all technicalities let a player off is just a sad day for all the clean players and those that abide by the rules within professional baseball. So Travis Tigard, the CEO of the U.S. Anti-Doping Agency, is basically saying that Ryan Braun is dirty and that he basically got off on a technicality. And essentially, he did get off on a technicality. I mean, this is similar to a guy in a lot of ways. If you're not getting your rights read to you, you get arrested, you don't get your rights read to you. This is similar to that. This is similar to you getting off because of that. This is similar to that. So, I mean, it is what it is in a lot of ways. But Ryan Braun is considered a clean player at this point. He is considered a clean player and essentially got off on a technicality. He essentially got off on a technicality in a lot of ways. And apparently a few days after the initial test, well, not a few days, but a moment later after the initial test was taken, Ryan Braun did take a second test. And apparently that test, according to reports, was within normal limits. So, I mean, it's a lot of layers to this story. This is an interesting story, and I don't think we've heard the last of this story with Ryan Braun. But at this point, Ryan Braun is considered a clean player. And now, in the court, you know, the court of public opinion will definitely differ. Major League Baseball would differ with you. And so we'll see what happens. But you look at it now, you look at this whole situation with Ryan Braun, and in a lot of ways he alluded to yesterday that essentially this sample may have been tampered with. And my question to that is, why would you want to tamper with a sample of the MVP of Major League Baseball? I mean, why would you want to do that? Why would you want to do that? I mean, what is the sense in that? There is no sense in that. Nonsense, no sense whatsoever. I mean, Ryan Braun is saying that possibly saying that his sample may have been tampered with. But why? What would be the reason to tamper with that? Well, what are you gaining by tampering the sample of Ryan Braun? If you're the company who is in charge of that, if you're Major League Baseball, it would be the company in charge of collecting the sample and testing the sample, why would they do that? Well, why would they do something like that? And if that was the case, according to some reports, I mean, you know, authorities, the legal authorities would be involved. FBI and would be involved in something like that. So, you know, I mean, you look at it. Ryan Braun is considered, in some respect, and I'm not saying he's clean, but the reality is he got off on a technicality, and right now, to many, he is considered, well, according to the arbitrators, he is considered a clean player.
Well, but you know as well as I do, first of all, let's be honest, you know as well as I do that he got off, his press release was ridiculous. The fact is, I think this is, like, I'll say this. He makes me laugh and sick at the same time because he's so stupid. Because you now have to play, he's Manny Ramirez. And I say that because what's he going to do, Paul? Where's, you know, look at what Manny Ramirez goes through. You know, look at Big Poppy. All these guys now having to really play at a level, a high level, without their juice, they suck. So where's he going next season? What's he doing putting out this about, you know, he's this kind of player, that kind of player? He's a cheater, and he's a fraud, and so.
I understand what you're saying, but I think in the reality is, I mean, if he was truly a cheater and a fraud, then the suspension would have stood. But, I mean, and you know, let me take that back for a second. Because the reality is, the reason the suspension was overturned was because, basically, of a technicality.
So, in some respect,
what you're saying, and I'm going to have to agree with you here, is what you're saying is some truth to what you're saying, because in a lot of ways, he's not necessarily he's not innocent. I guess he's basically not guilty. There's a difference between that. I mean, you can make the argument, it's similar to like O.J. Simpson in that whole trial. He was considered not guilty, but many people don't think he's innocent.
Well,
and in some respect, go ahead.
You're a sick man because you love to bring up O.J. Simpson. See, I was one step above your sickness because I was going to bring him up, but I didn't want to be as dilutable as you are. Here's the truth in all this, and you bring up O.J., and as I said, I wanted to be as sick and disgusting as you and compare a murderer to a guy that used steroids.
As far as we're concerned, he's not guilty, so in a lot of ways he's not a murderer. But continue.
But the point is, I'll go to bat. Very few times I'm going to go to bat for Major League Baseball because I think they are the dumbest, ugliest organization known to man. But in this instance, they did the right thing because he got off. But just like O.J. Simpson, LeBron is going to come out of this, in my opinion, he has nowhere to go but down. And I'll say that, and I'll stand on this because if he cleans up his game, he's out of baseball. In my opinion, he's out of baseball in 3 years. Or he'll be a Manny Ramirez. He will be in 2 weeks, in 2 months, or in 1 year, he'll be tested again and he'll be positive again, and he's done. Or he'll be Big Poppy, which is a has-been, who's living off of a reputation and the fact that problem is in Major League Baseball is there's a lot of pitchers that really, you know, that aren't as good as they should be, especially in the American League when you're hitting DH. But his numbers pale in comparison to where they were when we obviously know he was juicing. Difference is he stopped and look at his game. But he, you know, Braun now is faced with this critical decision of where do I go? If I would have been Braun, I'm telling you, Paul, I would have done a total about face. I would have never put that press release out. I would have never allowed my agent to sit there and paint me to be some victim, darn sure knowing that the glove fit and by accident the jury acquit.
Well, I mean, like I said, I mean, this is basically you getting pulled over, you having drugs in your car, you getting arrested, but basically your police officer who arrested you, forgot to read you your rights. And basically, you would get off. You would get off because you were not told your rights. And in some respect, I mean, it's not ultra similar, but in a lot of ways, it's a technicality.
That's how
he got off. That's how he got off, essentially, on a technicality.
He's a druggie. Let's keep that.
Well, we can't call him a druggie, but
well, I will. How about that?
Well, you.
He took a drug. He took a drug, Paul. He's a drug.
Well, let's look at Ryan Braun over the years. Let's start in 2007, 34 home runs, 97 RBI. 2008, I said 34 home runs. I'm sorry, 97 RBI back in 2007. 2008, 37 home runs, 106 RBI. 2009, 32 home runs, 114 RBI. 2010, 25 home runs, 103 RBI, and in 2011, last year, 33 home runs, 111 RBI. So, I mean, these past 5 years, he's put up some big-time numbers. He's put up some very big-time numbers. But
and he's the guy who sits there and says, but he sits there and says, what? He's taken all those tests, and this is the first, like, almost.
Well, he's passed all his tests up to that one test where he was caught, basically, in a lot of ways. They had him. And, you know, he's basically suggesting that basically this sample was tampered with, which is, you know, I mean, it's just like saying, and going back to the O.J. Case, and I guess it's similar to saying that the DNA, the blood work, the blood that was there on the scene was tampered with. You're saying that.
It's asinine, Paul.
It was tampered with, and that to me is, that's a stretch. That's a big-time stretch. It wouldn't benefit anybody involved to tamper his sample. What is the benefit for anybody to tamper Ryan Braun's sample? What is the benefit?
Well, and especially, and you know this as well as I do. What's the benefit to Major League Baseball? To tamper with the MVP, what would be Major League Baseball's impetus? Look at it from a strictly financial business move. Why would they want a guy who obviously has MVP stature, forgetting about the fact that he got it, and why would they want to set up a guy that was theoretically about to be the MVP of their league? That was the single most asinine, you know, notion ever put out there. I mean, Major League Baseball is dumb. They are by no means that dumb.
And he can't really answer the question in terms of the synthetic testosterone that was found in his urine. You can't really answer that away. You can't throw that away. You can't discount that. I mean, and his argument, according to reports, the argument of his legal team was that basically that Major League Baseball did not follow protocol, the normal protocol, which is sample. You take the sample. The same day the sample was taken, the sample must be sent out. His argument, his legal team's argument, is that, you know what, that did not happen, and it didn't happen. The sample was not sent out till Monday. The sample was taken on a Saturday, and it wasn't sent out till Monday. So that's 2 days. That's 48 hours. And so, you know, and the reports are that the guy who took the sample, his thought was, well, it's going to sit in that FedEx warehouse for the weekend. So the sample is better off staying at his house, and the sample is better off being, you know, the sample was better off being at his house rather than a FedEx warehouse. So you look at all these things, and I mean, the reality is, yes, we have to say at this point, we don't have to say it, but, I mean, the reality is, according to everything that's happened, he won his appeal. He appealed it. He won, basically, in the eyes of Major League Baseball. And in some respect, we have to say that he is a clean player at this point. But the reality is, the question is the true question, is he really a clean player? And I think that's the big debate at this point. And, again, there's a lot of layers to this story. And, you know, there's probably more that has not come out about this story. And this is a developing story. It's an ever-evolving story. So we don't really know what's going to happen with this story and how this story will play out when it's all said and done. But the reality is, at this point, he is considered a clean player. And I was reading quotes from the CEO of the U.S. Anti-Doping Agency. He basically said he got off on a technicality. Major League Baseball said he got off on a technicality. So, and his argument was basically, his legal team's argument was that Major League Baseball did not follow protocol. So, in a lot of ways, he got off from a technicality. But now at this point, if you're Ryan Braun, you can say that. You can come out and tell the world, you know what? I was clean. I'm clean. I'm a clean player. You can come out and tell the world that now. And also you have to look at this and this whole situation and how these things came out to the public. This is supposed to be a confidential thing. This is supposed to be a confidential process. It's just like the grand jury report many years ago that came out that implicated the 103 names, guys like A-Rod and those guys on that list. That list should not have came out. Those things should not be leaked. And, you know, in some respect, his rights were violated in that respect. But then you don't know who you can put that on. Is that baseball? Or I guess in some respect it is baseball because it was leaked. Well, we don't know who it was leaked from. But, you know, so you look at this whole situation with Ryan Braun, and like I said before, it's an ever-evolving story. And we're not really going to know what is what. Maybe for, you know, maybe for years from now. Years from now, we may not even know what this story is all about and whether or not he truly is clean or dirty. I mean, the reality is he got off on a technicality. So is he really clean? He did offer to take a DNA request. He did offer that. Major League Baseball declined that request, but he was offered that. He did offer that. But again, it comes down to this. I mean, and in some respect, moving forward, and you look at it, if you're Major League Baseball, while you may be unhappy about how things turned out here, in some respect, you got to be happy that your MVP, in a lot of ways, is quote-unquote clean. And I got to put the clean in quotes because we don't know how clean he truly is. But you have to put the clean in quotes at this point. But if you're Major League Baseball, you got to be happy about that right now. You got to be pretty happy about that because your MVP is now considered in a lot of ways clean. So this is, in some respect, a win for Major League Baseball. This is a win for them in a lot of ways. You got to be happy if you're baseball.
Well, I mean, you're going to sit there and say it's a win-win because for Major League Baseball in and of itself, because they exposed him and they don't really pay a price.
Well, he wins. Baseball wins, though. Baseball wins from the standpoint that now their MVP, in some respect, is considered quote-unquote clean.
But where do they go, Paul? Here, I mean, I guess one of the questions that I would have is, if I'm a baseball fan, and I say that kind of jokingly, where do you go in terms of this is a league that you still are seeing players essentially challenging the notion of playing clean.
Well, I mean, I think you can make the argument for that. You know, this is a problem in all sports. I mean,
not in baseball.
I mean, you can make the argument. This, I mean,
not in football.
You look at,
it's not in football. Well,
you look at,
not,
you look at. I mean, there. You don't think. Well, there's players, Sean Merriman, who was suspended for a period of time because of testing positive, and there's been other players who have tested positive for...
Paul, that is a league that, it seems, to me, they are very diligent in finding...
Well, they do a decent job of them, and baseball, to this point, has been doing a decent job. I mean, you know, many years ago they weren't, but now they've done a decent job. They got a program in place. Manny Ramirez was a guy who was suspended because of this program, and Ryan Braun essentially was allegedly suspended. Well, he was suspended, and now it's overturned, but the thing is, you look at it, baseball does have a system in place now, and their MVP was suspended. So you can't say now that baseball is not doing enough. They're doing what they have to do now, I think, with this whole process. But even with this, all these process and everything, all these tests and everything, players are still going to try to find a way to get around it. And players probably will get around it. That's just the nature of the situation. And there's probably going to be other things that will come out that will help you avoid certain tests and help you be able to test negative when in actuality you're positive. So there are probably things out there that will help mask some of these performance enhancing drugs, and the products will probably continue to come out there that will help mask performance enhancing drugs. So I mean, moving forward, I think, you know, there is a decent program in place. But right now, I mean, give Ryan Braun, give his legal team a lot of credit because his name was mud. And now, because of this appeal, his name still may be mud in some circles, but the reality is he's not suspended. And in some respect, he can argue now that, you know what, I am a clean player. I am.
Well,
a clean player.
He's not arguing it, Paul. He said it. I mean, he's proclaimed it.
Yeah. You can argue it. You can say it. Say and argue it. Same thing. I am a clean player. Say what you want. I am a clean player. And that is the reality of my situation. I am a clean player. So, I mean, we'll see what happens with this whole story moving forward. And it's an interesting story. It truly is an interesting story. And it was a shock because, again, this has never happened before. No one has successfully challenged this situation. No one has successfully challenged a positive test. And he was able to successfully challenge it. He was able to do it. And now he is considered, quote, unquote, a clean player. He is considered, quote, unquote, a clean player. And at that point, I mean, we'll see what happens with the story, but he is considered a clean player. And that's the reality of Ryan Braun's situation at this point. And speaking of guys who are going to be tested, prodded, poked, asked a bunch of questions, the NFL Combine is going on this weekend in Indianapolis. The players are coming out there, trying to prove and show GMs and scouts and teams around the league that they should draft them and that they are worthy of being drafted by a particular team. And we talked to a few players last week as they prepared for the Combine and everything. And you look at this situation going into this Combine and being interviewed by a bunch of different teams, being asked a whole bunch of different questions, being poked by various teams, being tested, your physicals and things of that nature. That's got to be a tough time for you. That's got to be a very stressful time. And you got these guys 22, 23 years old, you know, essentially going through a gauntlet in a lot of ways. They're going through a gauntlet, being interviewed by this one and that one and so on and so forth. And you look at it, that's got to be a tough time for the players. That's got to be a very tough thing for players to have to deal with. But it's the reality of their situation, and a lot of them have been coached and prepared for this moment, for this opportunity. And this is a big moment. It's a big opportunity. This is probably one of the biggest weekends of a lot of their lives. I mean, this can set up, you know, where they'll be drafted and the teams that they'll go to. And this could set up a lot of guys and put guys in very good positions. And it could also put guys in very bad positions. So this combine is going to be a very interesting thing and how it works out for some of these players. Guys can go up, guys can go down. And then you look at the combine. I remember, I believe it was 1995, Mike Mamula, who was drafted by the Philadelphia Eagles. Mike Mamula was a combine freak. I mean, he did all the things at the combine, all the measurables, all the speed and all the things, the 40, he did everything. And he moved up in the draft because of it. He moved up in the draft because of it. And so the Eagles grabbed him. I believe they traded up to get him. So you look at Mike Mamula in that situation, he helped himself. He helped himself because of his combine performance, because of what he did at the combine many years ago. He helped himself. And so this is an opportunity to help yourself, but this is also a chance to hurt yourself as well. So guys really need to be prepared. This is a job interview. This is a job interview. And if you go into a job interview, if we had a job interview, we're going in a suit and a tie and making sure everything is clean and so on and so forth. If a guy goes into a combine overweight or ill-prepared for questions and things of that nature, that you know, you cannot do that. That's basically similar to if I was going to go to a job interview with a wife beater and basketball shorts. If you're going to come to the combine out of shape, overweight, and not prepared, that is basically me and everybody else going to a job interview with a wife beater and basketball shorts. This basically is your job, and this is an opportunity to prove.
What happens now, though, with the new, you know, with the new NFL, 10-year agreement and rookie salaries now being way cut down? maybe not this year, but maybe it will start with this year, with the fact that the combines are a huge interview, and they will never not be. But do you ever see a point in time where guys like Mike Mamula's, because the draft now, the salary structure has come way down, people aren't going to be taking these tremendous gambles, and it will kind of get back to talent base of where these people should be every week, not where it should be. You get a guy like Mamula who never belonged. That was abominable.
Well, I mean, it turned out to be a reach in a lot of ways. It turned out to be a big reach.
Every draft. You know as well as I do. That's every draft.
Well, it happens. Guys will come out here and, you know, this is not football. This is, you know, this is shorts and tank tops. Football is not football with shorts and tank tops. It's a whole different ball game when you're in shorts and tank tops in comparison to when you have pads and helmets and everything strapped on. This is a whole different ball game. And in some respect, you can't really gauge heart with some of these workouts. I mean, maybe you can find out about heart in terms of when you interview a guy and when you talk to a guy. But even then, guys can always fake it and always put some certain things out there and be prepared to answer some of the questions and be prepared to give you the answers that you want to hear. So that comes down to preparation in a lot of ways. And so you look at this situation with the combines and everything. Guys here are preparing themselves to be on NFL rosters. They're preparing and they're showing the world and showing the scouts and basically showing the world because it's on NFL Network. They're showing everybody what they have to offer and why you should draft this guy. Why you should draft this man, that man. Why you should give this guy an opportunity. Why you should give the keys to your franchise to RG3, Andrew Luck. Why you should give the keys to the franchise to those guys. I mean, you'll find out a lot as you interview these guys. And Andrew Luck is not throwing, and Robert Griffin III is not throwing either. But, you know, those guys are going to get the – people are going to talk to them. They're going to find out where their head's at. So we'll see what happens with this whole situation, this whole NFL combine this weekend.
You can't really – Paul, you can't really think that Andrew Luck – I mean, a guy like Andrew Luck is going to walk into the draft and not have the draft won't hurt a guy like Andrew Luck. I think those are – and we hear that last week. Like, it's very impressive to see that – I mean, this becomes the start of their careers. Being in a combine, going prepping for the draft and the combine, those players were telling us what? The average time they're getting ready, they start practice at 6:30. These guys are up at 5-ish then, and then they're, you know, done 4:30. That's a 12-hour-plus day, Paul. I mean, that's a job. For most Americans, they're a first shift worker basically. They're up at 5 and they're home at 7.
Right. I mean, it's the nature of what they're preparing for. They're preparing for this draft, and basically at this point they're grinding, and they're on their grind right now. And they're working out all hours of the day. They're preparing for interviews to be interviewed by various teams. They're preparing for the interview process. So they're preparing for all these various things. And so this is a big time for a lot of guys. A big time. And, you know, like I said, you're being interviewed by, you know, a lot of different teams. You're being interviewed by a lot of different teams. A lot of different teams in your face interviewing you, asking you questions. And, I mean, you proved all the things that you proved for three, four years at college in some respect, you have to prove it again. You have to prove it again. And again, and again, and again. So, you know, these guys are doing that right now. They're trying to prove themselves to the world and prove themselves to the teams around the National Football League. And we shall see how this combine turns out. We shall see what happens with this combine. But, guys, I mean, this has got to be a stressful time for a lot of guys right now as they prepare for the NFL Combine, not prepare. Now, at this point, the preparation is done. Now it's time to show and prove and show what you got to the league and to the National Football League. And I want to switch gears now, and I want to look at this whole situation with Brady Quinn and Tim Tebow. And Brady Quinn essentially said that there was some luck involved in this whole Tebow mania and how Tim Tebow and the Broncos were able to have success that they had this year. He said there were some, basically he called them lucky in some respect. He called some of the things that happened, there was some luck involved, and there is obviously luck involved when it comes to any type of sport. Luck is a part of what happens in sports. Luck is involved with sports. But you look at it, and Brady Quinn was basically saying, you know what, he said this to in this GQ article, that I was the second-string quarterback, and then weeks later, they put Tim in, and you know everybody's chanting his name, and there's billboards out there for him, and he's basically saying, you know what, and here are his quotes right here, got the quotes right here. Early in the season, there was a game when Kyle got hurt, and that's Kyle Orton, who was the quarterback initially, was the quarterback for the first five games for the Denver Broncos. Kyle got hurt, and the coaches were calling for me to go in, but Kyle got up and finished the game out. So I was the second-string guy. Then a few weeks later, they decided to put Tim in. I felt like the fans had a lot to do with that, just because they were chanting his name. There was a big calling for his name, big calling for him. No, I didn't have any billboards. That would have been nice. And those are the words of Brady Quinn. And Brady Quinn is saying, you know what, in some respects, the fans are the reason that Tim Tebow got into the game and surpassed him as the quarterback on the depth chart, because initially Brady Quinn was the second string quarterback and Tim Tebow was the third string guy. But Tebow mania, guys chanting his name, and like he said, billboards and all that other good stuff, changed things. It changed things, and Tim Tebow and Tebow mania took off. It took off from there. Tebow mania took off from there, and Tim Tebow took off from there. And in some respect, I mean, what Brady Quinn was saying, I mean, I think there's some truth to what he was saying. I think there is some truth to what he is saying. I mean, luck did play a big role in maybe Marion Barber sitting out of bounds, stepping out of bounds when he should have stayed in bounds. I mean, luck may have played a role in a lot of things, like getting an onside kick. Luck may have played a role there. I mean, so against the Miami Dolphins, a game where they were down by a lot of points and basically done, left for dead, and they got an onside kick, and they were able to win that particular football game in overtime. So luck may have had a lot to do with a lot of things that happened with the Denver Broncos this year and Tim Tebow. I mean, isn't the truth what Brady Quinn was saying and is saying? Probably.
First of all, I think what Brady Quinn, here's the one problem, and I'll say this. The one thing that Brady Quinn did that was probably stupid was not recognize that he should have said from the jump that he understood that organization at that time, in that situation, should have given the reins over to a guy like Tebow, because like you said, if there was an injury and their record was way better than it was, they're never putting in Tebow. They put in Tebow because they know who Quinn was as a quarterback. Their question from the organization standpoint is, what are we doing with the other quarterback that we have? So, you know, but did then Luck take over? I think that's moot. I don't think anyone is going to question that Tim Tebow got, in a way, let's use the word lucky. But let's also say this. At the end of the day, what did he do, Paul? He produced, didn't he?
Well, he won, he won, and he won, and he won, and he won, and he won. All he did was win, 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 no matter what. And so you look at it, he won. I mean, he stepped in, and he did what he had to do to keep the job. That's what he did, and he did it successfully. He did it successfully.
Exactly. So I think
and
all the
you
haters,
can't really argue
I think, exactly,
with the result.
That's my point.
Well, I guess you could argue with the 46% completion percentage, which is less than half of your passes completed. You can argue with some of those crazy games where 2-for-8 and 6-for-22 and games like that. I mean, you could argue with that. But the bottom line is this, and I said this last week, the Denver Broncos were left for dead. They were dead in the water until Tim Tebow came in. Now, you could make the argument, is Brady Quinn a better quarterback skill-wise than Tim Tebow? Is he a better passer than Tim Tebow? I think, you know, his short body of work, I think Brady Quinn is a better passer than Tim Tebow. Just watching the two and watching each other, watching their games throughout the course of the years, I think Brady Quinn is. I think Brady Quinn has some talent, and it was my opinion that Brady Quinn and Kyle Orton were more talented than Tim Tebow. It was my opinion that a lot of players, a lot of quarterbacks, were more talented than Tim Tebow. But the bottom line is, it kind of sounds like sour grapes at this point when you come out and say those type of comments. And that's why, whether it's true or not true, that's why it's probably better off not being said. Some things in life are better off left unsaid. And that's just life. Some things are better off left unsaid. Left unsaid. And that was one of those situations. Better off left unsaid. You don't say it.
I told you, I think the way it was said, Paul, I would say that when he said it, it should have he said it wrong. I don't think there was anything wrong with saying it. I vehemently will say I somewhat disagree with you. I think it was the way, and also this was something that this is the media. This is me why I will say I don't disagree with you that when you say stuff like this, it can get you into trouble because here again you get. Very much, you can get yourself into a pickle because here you go again in terms of the media. This is something the media will catch on to, and bang, you now become the latest craze. You become what's all over SportsCenter, it's all over everything, all over everywhere, all the time. And that was stupid of him until it simmered down. And that's why I say he should have been smart. Brady Quinn is smarter than that. And I think you and I both know that, that he's so stupid.
And he had that Notre Dame education. That should mean something. Let's bring in now linebacker for the New Orleans Saints, the one, the only, Martez Wilson. Martez, how are you, sir?
How you doing? How y'all doing?
Doing well. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you. No problem.
And Martez, right now the NFL Combine is going on right now. And last year you had one of the best 40 times for linebackers at last year's Combine. Going into that Combine, what was your mindset?
Just to show my talent, showing that I am one of the best linebackers in the 2011 draft. That was my mentality. And one of my goals was to be the fastest linebacker, and I accomplished that.
Right, and you did, and you ran a 4.4940 at the Combine last year. Before you heard the time during that run, did you know that you really got a good time?
I mean, I did. I mean, my takeoff felt kind of good. I know the second one I tried to push off a little stronger, but I was confident in my ability because I've been clocking in at 4.4s, combat training. So I was kind of going to NFL Combine.
Now, you talked about the training. Before you ran that 4.49, did you get any lower than that 4.49 in your training?
I mean, I clocked in at 4.42. I mean, that was one of the fastest times I clocked in. Besides that, that's it.
Right. And looking at it now, leading up to the draft and the combine and everything, you know, guys they're doing a lot of training and doing a lot of preparing. Was that a stressful time for you?
It wasn't kind of stressful. I mean, because, I really wanted to be in the NFL, so I knew the hard work was going to be hard. You know what I mean? Anytime you want great success, it takes great hard work to get there. And, I was willing to do that because I wanted to be where I'm at now, and it pays off.
And so we know
it was
what
a
you
great
did
moment
at,
for me. Yeah.
And we know what you did at Illinois. You did your thing there, and it's almost like with this whole draft process and the combines and the pro days and all those things, you almost have to prove yourself again. Did it feel that way?
Definitely, because the NFL is a whole different level. Here you got to prove not only is you worth the draft spot you've been selected, but you have to showcase your talent and trust as well, you know, amongst your teammates before the coaches, because you playing, these grown men you playing with now, you know, everyone playing for pride, money, everything, you know what I'm saying? Support
right.
their family, loved ones, love of the game. You know, you got guys who love the game just as much as you do now, you know? And
right.
you got to earn their trust, you know, coming in as a young guy, you know, willing to learn under the veterans and things like that. So, yes, it's proving yourself all over. And then once you get that trust level become mutual amongst your teammates and coaches, that's when, you know, you became an NFL guy.
We're talking to Martez Wilson, linebacker for the New Orleans Saints. Go ahead, Jeremy.
Well, he brings up a great point, Martel. I mean, talk to everyone about – but I'd like to hear more about the business and the psychological aspects of the combine. I mean, are you – or do agents, do professionals come in and mentor you on, you know, like you just said, that this now is your career. This is your livelihood. They are grown men supporting their families.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, like, yeah, we had a lot of people, you know, who tried to come in and talk to us, you know, telling us about some mistakes they knew about or they seen someone make, so we wouldn't make the same mistakes going into the combine as far as the interviews, just as far as any slight mistakes as far as behavior, you know, character issues. So I think that was the best advice I got, you know, coming into the combine, you know, to understand the business side of it, because you have to have great character as well. You know, you just can't be a great player with bad character. You know, the NFL don't allow that. So I think that was the best advice I had going into it, you know, to help me on the business side of it.
Right. And Martez, you were very fortunate to be drafted along with your college teammate, Nate Bussey, by the New Orleans Saints.
Yeah.
And how much did Nate help you with the transition to the National Football League?
We helped each other pretty well because, like, not only did we come into college from day one, you know, we have 4 years in college together. We lived together in college. So to be here in our rookie years is just like, you know, college all over again, itself at a higher level, you know, the professional level that we both wanted to play at. So, that I mean, it was kind of easy because, you know, that was like my road dog. That's my buddy, someone I'm trust, someone to go through the same journey as I am, you know, so it felt good.
And looking at your season now, Martez, I mean, you guys lost in the divisional round to the San Francisco 49ers. Obviously, the New York Giants are Super Bowl champions, and this is just my personal opinion. I felt like if you guys could have got the Giants in the Dome again, you guys would have gotten to the Super Bowl, just my personal opinion. But you look at this game against the 49ers and that loss in the divisional round, have you gotten over it to this point, at this point, I should say?
I got over it, you know, you have a 24-hour, you know, what you want to dwell over. Sometimes it stay on a little longer, but I mean, of course, that image and that day, you know, replays in my head over and over again. But, you know, I can't dwell on it. You know, I try not to dwell on it, and I don't. You know, I move on. But, I mean, do that day run back? Yeah, that episode, I mean, it remained that, you know. And I'm going to just use that, you know, as fuel for next season.
Right. And next season, you guys will have a different defensive coordinator with Steve Spagnuolo. Did you know anything? Have you heard anything about Steve Spagnuolo and his defense?
I know his defense is a little different. It's more of a 4-3. I know you like the blitz. I mean, I really haven't studied at all yet because, I'm pretty sure they are still installing themselves, you know. With the new defense. So as soon as I can learn it, I mean, I'll be right in the office learning it bright and early, you know. So, I mean, that's the best I can answer you. Your question.
Right. And looking at this season and everything, I mean, you played in a lot of meaningful situations as a rookie. How would you rate your rookie season?
Out of what? What scale?
Let's look at a scale 1 to 10, or you could even talk about how you would rate your rookie season.
I'll let y'all do the rating, but, I mean, I can just provide you with, like, I felt like my rookie season was a great one because not only did I come in, you know, learned the playbook in a short time, which is only training camp. We didn't have OTAs. We didn't have none of the offseason. So to come in and learn the playbook, execute in the preseason, and to continue to progress throughout the season, playing all special teams, and then in the playoffs, you know, playing on defense as one of the guys, you know, I felt like my rookie year was a success. You know, I did all the things I wanted to do. I was working hard. You know, I was learning. The guys, you know, I was a guy, you know, the teammates, my teammates, you know, I was trustworthy. And, yeah, I felt like my rookie season was a good one. You know, I ended it well, you know, with the last game. But with that being said, I got capitalized this year, you know, and worked hard this offseason on all my weaknesses as well.
We're talking to Saints linebacker Martez Wilson. And Martez, last year, Drew Brees, he had a tremendous season, put up big-time numbers, a record-setting 5,476 yards. How great was Drew Brees this year? I mean, you saw it up close and personal. I mean, how great was that?
Man, it's great. It's great to have one of the best quarterbacks in the NFL in today's game. Like, to be a teammate, like, every day, just to listen to how you speak, watch his work ethic. Like, I never seen a quarterback, like, work that hard. Like, if you see him work out, you'd be like, oh, my God, yeah, he eat, sleep, and dream football all day long, you know, and live it.
Right.
Just like I do. So I looked up to Drew Brees as a teammate as well as, you know, like a mentor. So he's a great guy. And, I mean, I'm just great to be part of it.
Right. And Martez, there's an old saying out there that, you know, what defines you is what you do when no one is looking. And what is Martez doing? What will Martez do next season to improve himself when no one is looking?
Well, right now I'm going to start off by saying I already started training for 2 weeks already, going into my third week this week. So, I mean, I got right back into it right away, you know. I need to focus on all my weaknesses that, you know, that I didn't have, you know, last season, which was better pass rushing, more aggressiveness with my hands, you know, more aggressiveness in my hips and things like that, continue staying low, and just continue being aggressive, you know. Besides that, you know, I'm going to just have fun. Right now, I'm working on all them things, and I'm going to let my actions speak louder than my words next season.
Right. And, again, this is your first. Last year was your first year in the league. Compare a regular season game to a playoff game. Compare the intensity.
Oh, man, the intensity is way different. Like, playoff game, you know it's win or go home. You know what I mean? It's that man trying to send you home so you could be watching him play next week. So it's like, it's a whole different, like, feeling you have within yourself, you know, a whole different adrenaline rush. I mean, I kind of really, that's the best I can explain it. Well, you just got to be a football player, you
right.
know, on a playoff day to understand what I really mean, though. But it's just a feeling, you know, like no other.
And so it's basically something you just got to be there. You just have to be there to experience it.
Yeah,
and
it's great.
I can imagine. I mean, obviously, I'm 5'8", 100-some-odd pounds, so football really is not something that's going to happen for me. But, I mean, so I got to live through you, and I got to take your word for it.
Oh, yeah. And I be shining on the field, you know, help my teammates the best way I could.
And Martez, the NBA season right now, we're going to switch to the NBA, the halfway point. You're from Chicago, so I'm assuming you're a Chicago Bulls fan.
All day.
how you looking at your team, looking at Chicago Bulls, and this is the way I feel about it. Right now, the Miami Heat are the best team in basketball, and I don't think the Bulls have enough firepower to get by LeBron, D-Wade, and Chris Bosh. How you feel about your Chicago Bulls right now?
Well, you know, I mean, if Derrick Rose continues to stay out, you know, the rest of the guys continue to play well, and they continue getting that chemistry. I mean, the sky's the limit. I mean, they got one of the best records right now still, you know. And once again, like we was talking regular season and playoffs. In the NBA, the playoffs is when it really counts. You know, that's when they play their hardest. That's when they play the best defense. That's when they run their real plays. You know, they've been practicing all year. So that's when I can really, you know, have this conversation. Which that's when we're going to really be able to tell what teams, you know, is going to the championship.
Right.
But right now, they playing well.
And when we look at the playoffs last year, we can go by the playoffs, and the playoffs are, like you said, that's where the money is made in a lot of ways. I mean, last year, the Miami Heat, you look at that series, they beat the Bulls in five. LeBron and D-Wade and Chris Bosh, I just felt like it was just too much firepower. And I don't think the Bulls will have enough firepower to beat the Heat. I mean, the Miami Heat now, they're a year together, so they have that chemistry now. And that's it's just a lot of talent there.
I mean, you know, that's a conversation we can have all day, you know what I mean? But, I mean, I'm a Bulls fan, so I'm rooting Bulls all the way, D-Rose all the way, so.
And we'll just have to see what happens. We'll definitely have to
right.
see what happens. And it is the halfway point of the NBA season. Who is your MVP?
The NBA?
Yeah.
That's kind of hard. That's kind of tough. Because the Durant playing well. Man, I don't know. It's a lot of guys. I mean, I don't know. I'm not a guy to ask. No comment.
And you're right. Durant is playing well. LeBron is playing well. They're definitely playing some good basketball right now. You're right. And looking at it now, Martez, and again, you're in the off season, so you're kind of relaxing now. You're about to get yourself ready to have a successful 2012 season. Where can fans find out about Martez Wilson and some of the great things that he will be doing this off season?
Well, right now I'm working together to get my foundation together so I can have a camp going sometime this summer. Sometime I want to say in July or June, I'm thinking about, which would be held in Chicago.
Okay.
We're still working on a location right now, everything like that, putting all the papers together right now. But that's the first step with me doing anything because I want to help the kids. You know, I definitely got to, you know, help give back. I love doing that, you know, love to see them smiles on their faces. You know, definitely in my community, you know, many guys don't
right.
go back home and do it. You know, I want to be one of them guys that definitely does do that. You know, because I came from, you know what I'm saying, growing up in a project. So I know what it felt like, you know, to have a guy to go back and talk and just
right.
to relate to, you know, someone who did it.
I guess so it's safe to say that Martez loves the kids.
Oh, yeah.
And where can we follow Martez Wilson on Twitter?
Martez Wilson 95.
Okay. Fans, make sure you follow this man, Martez Wilson 95. You hear about some of the great things he's got going on in the community. You hear about his Chicago Bulls, and you hear about maybe some of the training that he's doing this offseason. So make sure you follow Martez Wilson. This is an interesting guy, so make sure you follow him. Follow
right.
Martez Wilson 95. Follow.
Yep. Follow.
Martez, it was a pleasure talking to you, man. We wish you nothing but the best of luck in 2012, and let's do this again. Good luck to you.
All right, thanks. Who that?
Martez Wilson, linebacker for the New Orleans Saints, and who that say they're going to beat them Saints. And not so many people beat the Saints last year. And I said this to Martez, and this is my opinion. I think if the Saints would have gotten the Giants in the Superdome, the Giants would have lost that particular game. I don't think the Giants would have made the Super Bowl. We saw what happened with those two teams played when those two teams played in the regular season. The Saints went up and down the field, Drew Brees. They put up about 49 points. Drew Brees put up big-time numbers. I don't think the Giants would have beaten the Saints in the NFC title game. Just my opinion. Just my opinion. I don't think they would have done it. But it's kind of a moot point in a lot of ways because the Giants are your Super Bowl champions, and they beat who they needed to beat and did what they needed to do to be successful. But I don't think they would have beat – I don't think they would have beat the Saints in the Superdome. I don't think that would have happened. What do you think, Jeremy? Your thoughts?
No, I mean, you know, every year, Paul. That's the and we just heard that. That's the NFL. You said it, and these hot teams in the playoffs. And look at the Giants winning the Super Bowl. I don't think anyone in their right mind predicted that the Giants were going to be Super Bowl winners. I mean, we thought that the dream team in the NFC was going to be the Eagles this year, and certainly wasn't the Eagles at the end of the season. So, you know. And this is the Saints team, too, that pretty much is going to stay intact and only going to get better now. So, I mean, certainly, you know, they've recently won a Super Bowl. I think the only good things are going to come for them.
Yes, I mean, and ultimately they do have to resign Drew Brees, but you know that's going to happen.
That's a formality. You and I both know that.
Yeah, I mean, Drew Brees will be resigned. He'll definitely be re-signed by the New Orleans Saints. And it would be crazy not to re-sign Drew Brees. As Martez put it, maybe the best quarterback in the National Football League. I mean, he's the best quarterback in the game. I mean, his numbers, one of the best quarterbacks in the game, I can't say definitively he's the best quarterback in the game, but he's one of the best quarterbacks in the game. You know, his numbers speak for themselves, his wins, his ability, what he has done for the Saints speak for themselves. They truly do speak for themselves. So this is a guy who's done a lot, Drew Brees, for the New Orleans Saints in that franchise, and a guy that was able to turn some things around. You know, he had the shoulder injury, and teams were scared off by that, but he was able to return and able to be successful. The second hour of Go For It starts now. In this hour, we're expected to be joined by Hall of Famer, 11-time Pro Bowler, the one, the only, the great Willie Rofe, get his take on some of the things going on around the National Football League, get his take on Tebow and Quinn, get his take on the NFL Combine and his experiences with the NFL Combine. So we're going to talk to the great Willie Rofe at 10 after. We're going to get his thoughts on those things and all things NFL. And we're going to get his thoughts on some of the things going on in the National Basketball Association. It is All-Star Weekend in the National Basketball Association. And, you know, that's an exciting time, obviously, for players and fans alike. And looking at this All-Star game and looking at the NBA at the All-Star break and looking at, more specifically, Jeremy Lin and Lin's sanity and Lin Sanity, you know, was the Miami Heat gave Lin Sanity and Jeremy Lin a rude awakening this Thursday night. I mean, they got into Jeremy Lin, and they were in his shorts throughout the course of that ball game. Mario Chalmers in his shorts throughout the course of that game, in his shorts, in his face. Didn't give him any type of breathing room. LeBron James and all those boys in his face, and ultimately it caused Jeremy Lin to have 8 turnovers. It caused Jeremy Lin to shoot 1 for 11 from the field. It made Jeremy Lin look like a scrub, basically. It made him look like a D-League point guard. I mean, they did a great job on Jeremy Lin. They got into him. And it's only one game, and, you know, you can't take that one game against the Miami Heat and say that this whole insanity stuff is a bust and it's not real, because the guy was averaging 23 points and 9 assists during his starts. So he's obviously putting up the numbers. He's obviously making plays for the New York Knicks, and he is the reason that the New York Knicks are now in the playoffs. But you look at the way the Miami Heat got into him and the way the Miami Heat were able to disrupt what he did, and they used their speed and their athleticism to shut him down. They shut Jeremy Lin down in that particular ball game. He was not the effective Jeremy Lin that we had seen the past few games. He was. They really laid it down on Jeremy Lin. They did what they had to do against Jeremy Lin. They put pressure on Jeremy Lin. The question now has to become, is that the blueprint? Is that the blueprint to shut down Jeremy Lin?
Well,
is that the blueprint?
But I think you will agree, Paul. We're pretty much finding the blueprint for him. There's, you know, he's still an unknown quantity, so they're finding that.
Right, and he's you know, he's at this point, like you said, it's an evolving situation in a lot of ways. Teams are now getting video of him and able to scout some of the things that he does, some of his tendencies, and in scouting those things, you now can make an informed decision on how you want to attack this guy. Before, there wasn't much film on him. Now there's a lot of film on Jeremy Lin. And now you can figure out how you want to attack this guy. Do you want to do speed against him? Do you want to do size against him? I mean, you now have the blueprint to figure out what works best against this guy. What works best against this guy? And we'll see what happens moving forward with Jeremy Lin, but the Miami Heat did a great job against him. They did a great job against Jeremy Lin. I mean, they really, really shut him down. They shut him down in that particular ball game. And talking about the Miami Heat, they talked a little bit about the Miami Heat with Martez Wilson of the New Orleans Saints. He's a Chicago Bears fan, Chicago Bulls fan, I should say. And looking at the Chicago Bulls and the Miami Heat, looking at the East now, you look at the East, and I say right now the Miami Heat are the best team in the East. I think they're the best team in basketball. They are the best team in basketball. They're just, they have another year together, another year to mesh. And with that type of talent, with guys like LeBron and Wade and Bosch, it's hard to beat that particular team. It's going to be hard to beat that particular ball club. It's going to be hard. And the reality is, LeBron James would not have just fallen apart in the NBA Finals, then Miami Heat would have beaten the Dallas Mavericks. I mean, LeBron James was a shell of himself in the NBA Finals. He was not the same guy for whatever reason. He was not the same guy that he was throughout the course of the playoffs in those NBA Finals. He wasn't that guy. He was not that guy. But you look at him now. You look at the things that he's doing. You look at the Heat and what they're doing. Adding a guy like a Shane Battier, who's big. You know, you add another guy who can knock down the three-point ball, and you add another guy who can defend. And those guys defend. The Miami Heat defend. LeBron defends. Wade defends. Those guys defend. You got Battier. He defends as well. Go ahead.
But that's a Pat Riley. You know, they're descendants of Pat Riley, and that's a Pat Riley coach team. And you know, it's not. I mean, this is the first time I think they've had an opportunity, if you will, to defend. So give them that. Let's give them that. Kudos. I mean, you'll agree, right?
Well, I mean, you look at it. The Miami Heat are a year together. And Pat Riley is not the coach, but, you know, Pat Riley is watching closely what's going on. But the Miami Heat have another year together, another year to mesh, another year to gel. And with all those things coming together now, all those things coming together now with Bosch and Wade and LeBron, and obviously adding a Shane Battier and adding Norris Cole, another guy they added, this is a team they're better. I mean, the point guard situation was a mess with the Heat for most of last year. Now Mario Chalmers is a year better. Norris Cole, the rookie out of Cleveland State, is playing some good basketball for you. So this is a great situation for the Miami Heat. This is a better team than they were a year ago. And they still have Eddie Curry on the bench, and if Eddie Curry can get back to the Eddie Curry of old, you have a guy who's a decent low post center. So you look at the whole situation. You look at the whole situation with the Miami Heat. You got to be impressed. And you got to say this team is a year better, and a team that is much more talented than it was a year ago. This is a more talented team. This is a more talented team. This is a better team than it was a year ago. This was a better team than it was a year ago. And they're playing some great basketball right now. Playing some great basketball. And they lead the East right now. They're the best team in the East. Have the best record in the East at 27-7. And they're tied with the Oklahoma City Thunder for the best team, best record, I should say, in the league. So you look at the Miami Heat. They're a team that who I predicted at the beginning of the year would win the NBA championship. They will win the NBA championship. I predicted it at the beginning of the year, and I think it will happen. And I also predicted a Miami Heat-Oklahoma City Thunder final. And right now, that is looking pretty good as well. Both teams 27-7. Both teams on top of their respective conferences. And both teams tied for the best record in the NBA. So
So you will then say right now, you know, almost midpoint, you're locked and loaded now for the second half of the season. You won't make any adjustment. You won't say that what is right now, I mean, it's important, but is that be all end all?
Well, I said before, and I'll say it again. I predicted the Heat to win the NBA Finals. I predicted the Heat Oklahoma City Thunder final, and I'm going to stick with that. And at the midway point, it looks good. 34 games into the season, that pick looks pretty good. Looks pretty good. So, yes, I'm sticking with it. Yes, I believe it'll happen. Yes, I think the Miami Heat will ultimately win the NBA Finals. But I will say this. In this lockout shortened season, this is going to be the year where the team that comes into the playoffs, the healthiest and the hottest, may be the team that gets and ultimately wins the NBA Finals. And it's almost going to be like football the last few years, because football nowadays, I mean, before, you know, you're the number one seed, it almost guaranteed you a shot at the Super Bowl and guaranteed that you would get to the Super Bowl. Now, the way the NFL is, a lot of ways, it's the team who is the hottest at this point. It's the hottest team going into the playoffs. And the Giants were the hottest team going into the playoffs this year. The Packers a year ago were the hottest team going into the playoffs. So it's the hottest teams who are now, you look at baseball, you look at this year with the St. Louis Cardinals. They were not the best team, but they were the hottest team. And you look at it, being the hottest team was the reason that the St. Louis Cardinals are where they're at. They're the reason that the St. Louis Cardinals are World Series champions. They are the reason.
I'm listening, but I can't say.
But the bottom line is this: hot team, and that's what's going to happen in the NBA this year. It's going to come down
baseball,
to the hot team.
I will say, I think baseball. There are sports like they. I will say this about football. Ordinarily, I think teams like the Giants get to certain places, but not always do teams like Giants win the actual Super Bowl. What I mean by that is they clearly, you know, you can do very well. You're not going to do maybe always win the Super Bowl. Baseball is that way because it's such a fickle sport. Injury bugs do play a long role. And seven-game series is it's an underrated challenge. And the best team always doesn't win, even in a seven-game series or in the playoffs, because teams can get hot. In a one game, the way the NFL structure is, it doesn't always work.
Well, you look at it, I mean, a seven-game series, more often than not, the best team is going to win. A five-game series, now, more often than not, I mean, a five-game series, and anything can happen. Hottest pitcher, hottest goalie, so on and so forth. But in a seven-game series, more often than not, the best team wins. A five-game series, you know, all bets are off because, again, hottest pitcher, hottest goalie can change a lot of different things. But like you said, the thing about the NFL, it's a one-game thing. It's one game. It's one game. And so you have to be your best for one game. If you're not your best in that one game, you could go home. So that is the reality of that situation. The NFL is one game. It's a one-and-done situation. It's a one-and-done situation. And that's the difference. And it comes down to that hot team that can kind of get it done in that one-and-done type of situation. It's win or go home. And that makes the NCAA tournament so special in a lot of ways. It's because it's that one game. It's the finality of that one game. You win, you lose. I mean, if you win, you go on. If you lose, you go home. It's like a seventh game of a series. And that's why a lot of teams don't want to go to a seventh game, because it's that tame type of thing. You lose, you go home. You win, you move on. And the Cardinals, perfect example in a lot of ways, that five-game series against the Phillies, Chris Carpenter outpitched Roy Halladay. I mean, Chris Carpenter, it was a shutout. He pitched a shutout, complete game shutout. But Roy Halladay only gave up one run. But the reality is Chris Carpenter and the Cardinals were the hotter team, and Chris Carpenter was the hotter pitcher in that particular ball game. He was the better pitcher in that particular ball game. And I think you look at the NBA, I think it may come down to that, the hottest team, the hottest and healthiest team.
But I think that's going to matter. I will say this, Paul. I think that kind of stuff will definitely matter up into one position. And that gets to when you look at getting into the playoffs. I do agree with you in one structure, that you will not get these teams who are less talented will not win championships. I mean, I think the Heat, this is definitely going to be, and the fact that this is a shorter season for the Heat, I think plays right into their ability to win an easier championship maybe this year than in another year. I think that they could be, we'll call them maybe a favorite because of that. But I think when you look at other teams maybe coming out from the West, it's always been a very fickle. The West has always been very fickle. But to win the championship, you got to have the talent. Last year, Dallas was a better team. They weren't lucky, Paul. Last year, Dallas was better. I mean, you're not going to make the argument that Dallas wasn't a better team, are you? I mean, to me, that I look at this and I go back and I say, when we want to compare and contrast, you know, baseball versus basketball with, so you know seasons, because basketball inside of seven games, very 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 rarely will the wrong team win those championships. You look at those Knicks teams. You know, in the 90s playing against Jordan, those teams, Paul, they couldn't win. They didn't win. They were not as talented as the Bulls. They were talented enough to get where they were going, but not talented enough to win. And I think the NBA is a league that, to a certain degree, has done a very good job and will always probably do a very good job, quote-unquote, capturing the ability of its teams to not fall into that trap, to not have the wrong team winning. Does that mean that I think, you know, you use Oklahoma? I think Oklahoma is a reach. I'll say that because I think still a lot of basketball is to be played, and I think Dallas is marginally more talented than they were last year, if not at the same level. And I think Dallas is they won now. They know every game they're playing, they've already played it. So to go in and to be able to beat that team, you have to have, will you call it luck? I guess maybe that's the only way I think I see Dallas losing their matchups this year.
I disagree on the Dallas talent level. I don't think Dallas is as talented as they were last year. I mean, you're missing a guy like Tyson Chandler, a guy who anchored the middle defensively, blocked shots, rebounded the basketball. Missing a guy like a J.J. Barea who made some big plays for you in those playoffs. You're missing the grittiness and the toughness that you had with Deshaun Stevenson, who was a guy that gave LeBron some problems, a guy who's a very good defender, a guy that can hit the three-point shot, an open three-point shot. So you're missing guys. And one thing about Dallas last year, they had great chemistry. And you look at Dallas, I don't think they were more talented than the Miami Heat last year, but I think they were more of a cohesive team, a cohesive unit than the Miami Heat were a year ago. And I think that cohesion that the Mavericks had was the reason that they were able to get to the NBA Finals and ultimately win the NBA Finals. And they got great effort out of Dirk Nowitzki, who was played out of his mind last year for the Dallas Mavericks in the playoffs and in the NBA Finals. But they had better chemistry I thought last year. But you look at this year, and again, that's a team that you brought up, but that's a team that, again, could be a team that gets hot when the playoffs come around. And in getting hot, they're a team that could get hot and be the healthiest. And getting hot, that could be the team that could use that and could get them through the playoffs. Charles Barkley said it a couple days ago, and I've said this numerous times as well. This is the year now where it's all about just getting into the playoffs. Let's just get into the playoffs, and whatever happens, happens. But let's get into these playoffs healthy. Let's get into these playoffs healthy. And if you can get into the playoffs healthy, then you have an opportunity and a great shot to get very far in the playoffs. A great shot. So it's all about being healthy. Again, it's all about being hot. And like I said before, this is one of those years now. Let's just get into the playoffs. And you know, I talked about the Miami Heat. And one team that is a team that, to me, if they can get into the playoffs, is the Mavericks team you talked about, is the Lakers with Kobe and Bynum. And we'll see what happens with Gasol. And we'll see what happens with some of the trades that may happen before the trade deadline, which is March 15th. But you look at all these things now, and you're saying to yourself, at some point, or what happens now? Who is going to be that team that could kind of become that hot team? I look at the Knicks, or another team that could be that hot team. The addition of J.R. Smith, a guy who can knock down the three ball, guy who can put up points. Carmelo now, healthy. Amari, Tyson Chandler, now Jeremy Lin stepping on the scene. Jeremy Lin balling right now and doing some great, incredible things on the court for the New York Knicks. I look at all these things now, and I'm thinking to myself, if Jeremy Lin really is the truth, if he is the truth, then the New York Knicks are a team that you have to watch out for, because Carmelo Anthony is a big-time scorer. Tyson Chandler is a big-time rebounder, shot blocker. Amari Stoudemire is a guy. Amari Stoudemire is a guy, you know, who can put up points and who can do some great things. And Amari does look a little different, though. He doesn't seem to have that explosion that he had years ago, but he's still a guy that can put up numbers and everything. So I look at the New York Knicks, and that's a team, to me, that is a team that could surprise some people come playoff time. That's a team that, you know, as Barkley said, let's just make the playoffs and see what happens. And let's make the playoffs, and let's make them healthy. Let's be healthy while we're making the playoffs. So that's a team that, in my mind, you have to look at and say, you know what? If Jeremy Lin is who we think he is and could be, and with Melo and, like I said, Stoudemire and Tyson Chandler, and a guy like a J.R. Smith, you have to look now at – you got to look at the New York Knicks as that team that could really surprise some folks. You have to look at the Knicks as that team. You really do. And I guess Boston as well. I mean, obviously with the big three, and this team looks a little different than they've had looked in years past, the Boston Celtics. I mean, they're starting to look a little older right now, and this shortened season probably doesn't help them. It doesn't help with all the games so close together. That doesn't help an older ball club. But this is a team that, again, if they can get into the playoffs,
no,
anything is possible.
No way.
Let me clarify my point. I don't think they're going to be a team that's going to get to the NBA Finals. But if you're a number one seed and the Boston Celtics are an eighth seed, the number one seed is the Miami Heat, that's not a team that's not your typical eighth seed. And that's not an eighth seed that you want to see. You don't want to see Garnett, Pierce, and Rondo, and Ray Allen. You don't want to see those guys. If you don't have to. You don't want to see those guys. Say what you guys say about the Celtics, Jeremy.
Well, no, I mean, I actually completely disagree with that point. I mean, they can get into the playoffs, not get into the playoffs. If they get in, it's because it's still a young East, and they belong nowhere. They belong at home. They belong in their wheelchairs. The team should be, unfortunately, that team's got to be blown up. They're old. period. I mean, Rondo's a nice player, but they're old. Any thought process to the otherwise is fool. As Charles Barkley would say, what, Paul? It's just in an Old Spice commercial. It's what?
Uncivilized.
Uncivilized. It's unfortunate. But like you said, it compare and contrast. Look at that team, and then look at a much younger, a much more vibrant Heat team. You see guys running up and down every night.
That part I'm not going to argue with. I'm not going to argue with that point in terms of, if these two teams were to play each other in the playoffs, the Miami Heat would, go up and down the court and would beat them. There's no doubt about it, they would beat them. But the Boston Celtics are not your typical eighth seed. Just like you look at the Memphis Grizzlies last year, they weren't your typical eighth seed, and they showed they weren't your typical eighth seed when they beat the Spurs. In a seven-game series in the first round. But you look at the Boston Celtics, they are not your typical eighth seed. They're not your typical eighth seed.
They're ancient. Stop it, Paul. You cannot – I am not going to let you sit here and try to say that they are older. You're right, Paul. They're not your typical. They're older.
They are older.
I mean – they're not because they're older. Let's keep it real. They are older. Period.
I'm not going to just end this at a period. But
the reason the Memphis teams played so well was simple, plain and simple. Why? For one reason, Paul, and you and I both know that. Because of what? And because of where? Because of who? Well, let's see. Memphis was a young team, Paul, right?
Well, the reason the Memphis Grizzlies were able to beat the San Antonio Spurs was the play of Zach Randolph. Zach Randolph was an absolute monster, an absolute beast in the playoffs. And I was talking about Zach Randolph last year, and I was saying at one point in those playoffs, after the first round, and even into the second round, you could say the MVP of the playoffs was Zach Randolph and his ability and what he did to the San Antonio Spurs. And that was just a bad matchup for the Spurs, and it showed. But what I'm saying is this, and matchups are big, and matchups will play a role in these playoffs, and as they always have. But the way I look at the Celtics is this. This is a team, again, with the talent that they have, with Garnett and Rondo and Ray Allen and Pierce, the experience that they have and the talent that they have, that's not an eighth seed I would want to see. That's not a team I would want to see. I would not want to see that.
Why?
Because of what I just outlined, Kevin Garnett, Ray Allen, Paul Pierce, Rondo. I mean, Rondo, arguably one of the better point guards in the league. Paul Pierce, one of the better closers in this league, one of the better clutch shooters in this league. Ray Allen, arguably the best pure shooter in this league. I mean, so, and Kevin Garnett's still getting it done at his age and one of the better power forwards in the game. You look at the Boston Celtics, and they do miss Jeff Green a lot, and he was out. He's obviously he's out for the year, obviously, with his heart situation. But I look at the Boston Celtics, and I say, yes, would they beat the Miami Heat in a seven-game series? I will say absolutely no. But who would you rather see in a seven-game series if you are the Miami Heat? And you look at it. And this is an interesting thing. The Cleveland Cavaliers are a game and a half out of the eighth seed. They're a game and a half behind Boston. Could you imagine if Cleveland and Miami were to play in the NBA playoffs and how exciting that would be? But that's another story. But you look at it. If you're the Miami Heat, who would you rather play, the Boston Celtics or at eight? And I'm going to pose these questions to you, Jeremy. If you're the Miami Heat, who would you rather play, the Boston Celtics or the Cleveland Cavaliers?
I gotta play Cleveland Cavaliers. I mean, but
now you're just trying to be disagreeable for disagreeable sake. Let's look at the Milwaukee Bucks, who are 2.5 games behind the Boston Celtics. Who would you rather play, the Boston Celtics or the Milwaukee Bucks?
No, I mean, I see, but my point is, Paul, you really think that the Celtics are really going to be able to make some noise deep into the playoffs?
I'm not saying they are. I think maybe I need to reclarify my point. I'm not saying that the Boston Celtics would beat the Miami Heat. But what I'm saying is that's not a team that you want to see in the first round because they can make your life a little miserable. And I'm not saying they're going to beat you, but they can push you to a longer series. And any time you play a game and you have those long series, there's always that opportunity for injury. So what I'm saying is if you have a long series with the Boston Celtics in the first round, there's that opportunity going down the line and moving forward where injuries could happen. And that's my point. My point is the Boston Celtics probably won't beat the Heat, but they probably will scare the Heat. They won't beat them, but they can scare them. And that's the way I'm looking at it. You don't want to be in a situation where you're extended and have a long series against the Miami Heat. I mean, against the Boston Celtics, and you're a Heat team, obviously, your goal is to win the NBA title. You don't want a long series against the Miami, against the Boston Celtics. You don't want a long series, period, in that first round. You want to get that team out in four or five games, because as you move on in the playoffs, the teams get a little better, and they become a little harder to beat. So you want to be at your best when you're playing those teams. So if you look at it, if you're the Miami Heat, you do not want to see the Celtics. I think you'd rather see the Cavs, and I think you'd rather see the Bucks because you don't want to be extended and have a long series. And that's where I'm going with it. And that's my bottom line, point blank, period, point blank, as you like to say. That's how I feel about it, and that's why I say if you're the Miami Heat, you don't want to see the Boston Celtics. And that's why. Because you don't want to be extended.
And you still believe that the Celtics are going to be able to get there. You believe that the Celtics are going to be able to maintain this level.
Meaning getting to the playoffs?
Yes.
Yes, they will. You got the Cavaliers and the Bucks who are behind them. I don't see any of those two teams surpassing the Boston Celtics. So, yes, they will be able to maintain this. So, yes, I do think the Celtics will be able to, they will be able to keep the Cavs and the Bucks at bay. They will not get into the playoffs. Those two teams will not sneak into the playoffs. They're just not good enough. They're just not good enough. But like I said before, that would be very exciting if the Miami Heat and the Cavaliers were to play in the playoffs. LeBron James and the Miami Heat against Kyrie Irving and the Cleveland Cavaliers, but just all the storylines, all the LeBron stuff. I mean, that would be a pretty exciting series to see. Now, I don't think it would be that series wouldn't go no more than five games, but again, it would be interesting because of all the storylines involved with it. That would make it interesting.
No, that's not the only reason it does become interesting. You're certainly right. I mean, but I don't know. I think it's too premature. I think the problem in this season is, I will say this, Paul, I think it's because it's a snap-quick injury, I think you will be hard-pressed to see anything up to 2 weeks for the end of the season because one wrong move and you get, you know, a team that can go from first to worst and worst to first.
Well, I mean, because of how short the season is and, you know, a lot of times you got to look at the teams that also get off to the good starts and how much that's going to help them getting off to those good starts. But you look at it, and things can change. Things can change, and right now the standings, like I said, if you look at the East, Miami, Chicago, Indiana, Philly, Orlando, Atlanta, New York, and Boston, seeds 1 through 8 in that order, and you look at them, you're saying that's not going to change much. That's probably – those are going to be the 8 teams that's going to make the playoffs. Now it's just a matter of how seeding is going to happen, what's going to happen, who's going to surpass who, and how's that whole thing going to work out. But those are the 8 teams in the East, and I don't think that's going to really change. And you look at the West right now, and this could change. I mean, Oklahoma City number one, Spurs two, Clippers three, Mavericks four, Lakers five, Houston six, Memphis seven, and Portland eight. But you have the Denver Nuggets, who are a half a game behind the Trailblazers. You also have the Minnesota Timberwolves, who are a game behind the Trailblazers. You also have the Jazz, who are two games behind the Blazers. That whole thing could change a little bit. More so the bottom of the conference. That would probably change a little bit, the bottom of the conference. And you can look at the Lakers and the Mavericks, and you can, you know, who knows how that's going to shape. Maybe the Lakers get four and the Mavericks get five. And the Clippers, we'll see what happens with them, but right now they're playing some good basketball. I think they'll hold off the Lakers and we'll keep that third spot. And I think the Mavericks will hold off the Lakers. I think Lakers are going to be at five when it's all said and done. But you look at it, and you say the West could change. Like I said, especially the bottom half, would you have the Blazers and the Nuggets and the Timberwolves, who are playing some decent basketball right now, and even the Jazz. But I look at it, it's probably either going to be Portland or Denver flip-flopping if anything happens. But you look at that, and the West is probably going to be the same as well. So, it should be interesting. And one thing you remember about the playoffs back in 1999, that season, the strike-shortened season with the Knicks, they were the eighth seed, and they were able to get ultimately to the NBA Finals. They were a team that got hot when it needed to get hot, and they were a team that throughout the course of the season were struggling with injuries and chemistry and things of that nature. But when they got into the playoffs, it all changed. That team put it together, and, you know, you look at it, and funny thing, and I think I talked about this before, but I remember Jeff Van Gundy talking about this. He talked about Allen Houston's shot, that shot against the Miami Heat in Game 5, that shot that bounced off the rim, off the glass, and into the basket. He says if that shot doesn't happen, he's probably fired that year. And he probably would have been fired. But that particular shot changed the course of those playoffs, and ultimately the New York Knicks were able to get to the NBA Finals as they beat the Heat. And those were some great, great games, the Miami Heat and the New York Knicks in the Finals. I mean, those were some great football games back then. Great basketball games, I should say. Those were some great basketball games back then. I say football. I'm watching the NFL Combine right now, and I guess football is on the mind. But you look at those series with the Knicks and the Heat. They went back and forth. They battled. It was physical. It was great. It was some good football. Basketball, still. I still got football on my mind.
Well, Paul, let me ask you this. You clearly believe that to that degree, then, that can be replicated. I mean, you got to remember, too, though, that Knicks team, they were, I think, going into the season, they were a talented team. People had expectations for them.
No, they were a talented team. I mean, it was hard not to be talented with Sprewell and Allen Houston, Marcus Camby, and Patrick Ewing and those guys. So you're right. It was hard not to – it was a talented team. But it was a team that kind of meshed later in the year. And so when they meshed, they were able to put it all together. And we're very fortunate to play the Miami Heat, a team that they matched up pretty well against. And we're very fortunate to have Allen Houston hit that shot to move them forward. But you're right. That was a team that during the course of that year that was underachieving. But like I said before, that's why I'm saying teams like the Mavericks, who are not playing to the level that they played a year ago, teams like the Celtics, who could, if they get into the playoffs, could surprise some teams, and teams like this New York Knicks ball club with Jeremy Lin stepping on the scene and now changing everything and changing the culture of that ball club, that's another team. If they can get in, anything can happen.
I think that you're using some strong words, changing the culture. The real team hasn't come back yet. Let's see what he's able to do when the real team comes back.
That is the real team. Mm-hmm. Melo's back, and we'll see if it meshes. I mean, that's the thing. How well those two will mesh when it's all said and done. And, you know, I'm impressed by what I have seen to this point. Well, not necessarily. Well, I'm impressed with what Jeremy Lin has done to this point, but I'm going to see if if Melo and Lin and the rest of those boys can come together and be a cohesive unit. I think they will be. I think it can work, obviously. And, you know, I think it will work. Now, to the extent of NBA Finals work, not too sure. But in terms of playoffs and being a scary team and a team that could do damage in the playoffs work, I think yes. And what I mean by damage is possibly win a round or two. That's what I mean by damage. I would say yes. But, again, we shall see. And being at the midway point of the NBA season, you have to start talking MVP and who is the MVP of the season if the year was to end right here, right now. And I would say I would have to go with LeBron James, and he was the guy that I predicted initially would win the MVP. LeBron James is a guy right now who's putting up some big-time numbers like he always does. I mean, the guy always puts up numbers. I mean, 8 rebounds a game, 6 assists, 27 points per game. I mean, the guy, I mean, if you look at it, he's the guy. If anybody's going to ever average a triple-double again, he is the guy that's going to average a triple-double. Not to say he's ever going to do it, but if somebody is going to do it, it's going to be LeBron James because of the numbers he's putting up. 8 boards a game, darn near 7 assists a game. I mean, those are big-time numbers. And, oh, by the way, 27 points per game. To me, LeBron James, in my mind, when it's all said and done, at this point, I would have to say he is the MVP. You can make an argument for Kevin Durant and the numbers that he's putting up for the Oklahoma City Thunder. And, again, that's a team that is the best team in the West record-wise and tied for the best record overall in the National Basketball Association. So we shall see. But if I'm going to have to make a prediction, and I'm going to have to say at this point, just talking right now, right here, right now, if the season was to end today, in my mind, the MVP of this league would be LeBron James.
You're overly impressed. I mean, I think actually, Paul, the hardest part about this season is finding the groove. I think, again, this is a young man's season in that, you know, for LeBron, this is coming off the second year, being in Miami, having more under his belt. I'm not, like, super – I can't exactly say I'm totally impressed with LeBron. That I mean, look, he's having a great season, but really, Paul, I have to say, until this guy wins a championship, I'm not sold on him.
I don't know how you cannot. Yes, he hasn't won a championship, but what is he doing? Let's see. He's third in the league in scoring. He's third in the league in scoring at 27.4 points per game. Oh, by the way, he's averaging 8 boards a game. Oh, by the way, he's averaging close to 7 assists a game. Oh, by the way, the Miami Heat have the best record in basketball, tied with Oklahoma City Thunder for the best record in basketball. LeBron James is balling. LeBron James is getting it done, and so is Kevin Durant. I mean, both of these guys are getting it done. It might be close. This might be a close vote because both teams have big-time records, because both teams have both players, I should say, have big-time numbers and putting up big-time numbers. So this is going to be a close vote, I think, this year. This is going to be an interesting vote. It's going to be a close one because you can make an argument for Durant and you can make the argument for LeBron. I mean, you can make legitimate arguments for these guys and how these guys have been playing throughout the course of this year. You can make legitimate arguments for both of them. And LeBron and Kevin Durant's averaging 8 boards a game and 3 assists a game. So, again, you can make an argument for both of these guys in terms of winning the MVP. If I had a vote, and I don't, but if I did, my vote would go to LeBron James right now, at this point of the year.
Who else is there, though, Paul, really?
Well, at this point, I think the argument comes down to LeBron, Kevin Durant. I think it's a two-man race. It's pretty much a two-man race at this point. LeBron, Kevin Durant. I don't think anybody else has really distinguished themselves the way these two have. And also that the way, you know, that both of these teams are very good ball clubs and have, like I said, are tied for the best record in the National Basketball Association. You do, that does get factored in terms of when guys vote for the MVP. More often than not, it's usually the best player on the best team. And the best player on the Heat, in terms of, I think LeBron James is the best player on the Heat. Dwayne Wade is the better closer, but I think LeBron James is a better player. But I think, and you look at Kevin Durant, he is the best player on the Oklahoma City Thunder. He is a closer as well. He is a closer. And so I think it's a two-man race. I don't think you can really argue that. It's essentially a two-man race. You would agree.
No, absolutely. Well, yeah, I mean, and I see LeBron winning. It's simple. I mean, it's LeBron to lose, and he's not going to lose. The MVP is his championship to me, and that's why I say that. So this guy.
Well, I mean, I think sometimes we're a little hard on LeBron. I mean, let's look at the guy. I mean, he's been to the NBA Finals twice. I mean, he put a Cleveland Cavaliers team on his back in 2007 and got them to the NBA Finals. And you remember during that run against the Pistons where he scored 48 points in that game. And I think he scored like 25 straight points from the fourth quarter to overtime. And so you look at that and you say that's a guy who puts a team on his back. And he put that team on his back. You look at that ball club, you have Varejao, Ilgauskas, Eric Snow, Booby Gibson, Donyell Marshall, I believe, was on that ball club. I mean, it wasn't a lot of talent on that team. There wasn't that second banana, that second guy. And LeBron single-handedly put that team on his back. And LeBron James carried that team to the NBA Finals. Ultimately, he would get swept by the San Antonio Spurs. But the Cavaliers are not in the NBA Finals if it was not for LeBron James and what he did. He put that ball club on his back. He put that ball club on his back. And he took them far, 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 and took them ultimately to the NBA Finals. And before you get in, Jeremy, look at the roster that the Cavaliers had the year they went to the NBA Finals. Let's look at the roster that they had. I mean, it's not an impressive roster. It's not an impressive group of talent. Guys, let's look at it. Ilgauskas, Larry Hughes, who was having a hard time meshing with LeBron James and everything. You also had Drew Gooden, Damon Jones, Donyell Marshall, as I said, Sasha Pavlovich, Eric Snow, Anderson Varejao, David Wesley. I mean, so the names are not the who's who's in the National Basketball Association. So, and you look at the team, LeBron averaged 27 points per game that year. The second best was Larry Hughes at 14.9. So, you look at that ball club, LeBron James put that team on his back. He put that team on his back and said, let's go and let me take you to the NBA Finals. And that's what he did. He took that team to the NBA Finals on his back. He was the reason that the Cavs made it to the NBA Finals that year. And even last year, looking at last year, I mean, you look at how he played the first three rounds, he was impressive. He was very impressive.
I won't
very, very
that.
Impressive. Your thoughts?
Well, no, I won't. I look at it and I do say that. I think, you know, but that's a LeBron. That's why I say to me, Paul, I fall into and you and I will go back and forth all day. I get kind of upset. To me, LeBron James, that's the player we expect to see. That's the guy that you're paying the money to see. I want to see him this year, and then I guess the caveat will be a strike-shortened year. Can he win a championship? Can he
do it? Well, let's not. LeBron has proven that he can be a guy, the big guy, the main guy. And like I said, I mean, you would have to agree. The names that I mentioned on the 2006 and 2007 Cleveland Cavaliers are not the who's who's in the National Basketball Association. You would have to admit that.
No, but Paul, that's why he doesn't win. I mean, that's why I say he's got to win this. You agree that?
Well, yeah, there's no excuses now. I mean, we had some excuses in Cleveland. Now Miami, there is no more excuses. You have arguably the greatest, you know, have arguably one of the best wing players in the game in Dwayne Wade. Arguably. Not saying he is, but arguably. And he's one of the better closers in the game. He's one of the better players in this game. And you also arguably have one of the better power forwards in the game in Chris Bosh. So there's no more excuses now. All the excuses that he's had with Cleveland are no more. Those excuses are out the window. There's no more excuses now. There's no more excuses. The excuses are just that. And excuses are just like, you know what, and everybody has them. So the reality is there are no more excuses for LeBron James. He has to win it now, and that's why last year a lot of people were very hard on him for not winning it. A lot of people were hard on him because of the talent that he had, because of the players that he had. And so
But this year, to me, more than ever, Paul, this has got to be their year because it strikes. This is their year on paper that they can't miss. And I say that because it is a strike short season, they're going to get teams at their worst. They're going to be able to walk in and beat a team, even not that they shouldn't. They'd have more problems with because their bodies can recuperate faster than Dirk Nowitzki's, period.
Well, they're a younger team. They're a younger team.
Right, and so you can't go into next year. It has to be this year for this team.
Well, and it does. I mean, again, there's no arguments there. You can't come out and not make it to the NBA Finals and not win the NBA Finals. I mean, they have to make it. Obviously, they're going to make the Finals, I think. But even if they don't, it's inexcusable. You have to get to the Finals and you have to win the Finals. It's either win or nothing else, because anything short of winning is essentially uncivilized. And so the reality is you have to win. And if they don't, there's no excuses for LeBron, Wade, or Bosh. There's no excuses. And, you know, some people have said if they don't win it this year, if they don't win it this year, they may break this thing up. Or at least think about breaking this thing up.
Let me say this, Paul. You know as well as I do, there's no thought. They're not breaking anything up. They paid too much money to get it, and it makes too much money. So they're not breaking it up from that regard. And I'll say that. From anyone out there that thinks because LeBron James even went on TV and said, I could see myself returning to Cleveland, what's the guy going to say? That he doesn't want to return to Cleveland? I mean, he got killed from leaving the way he left. So that was an olive branch. And that being said, now moving on to the next part, then no one's breaking this. There's too much money to be made here. The way it gets broken up is if someone says something stupid. And actually,
let's look at it, though. I mean, it's not as senseless as we may say. I mean, you get an opportunity to, let's just say you get an opportunity to get a Dwight Howard, for example.
You
would look
for
at
who?
Them.
For who, Paul? Who are they giving up? Who?
Either Wade or Bosh. I mean, either Wade or LeBron. I think I would. I would say this. I think I would give a Wade. I would rather give a Wade than LeBron.
Well,
somebody, I'd rather give a Wade than LeBron.
But
that's just my opinion.
But they're not getting him, so you can forget that.
We'll see. We'll see. We'll see, but I mean, I don't think it's. I think they're going to win this year anyway. So what we're discussing is kind of a moot point. I don't think there's any way in the world that. I think it can happen. Obviously, because the Oklahoma City Thunder are a talented team, the Bulls are a talented team, but I don't see it happening. I don't see it happening. I'll be surprised if it does happen. I don't think the Heat are just more talented than any team in this league right now. They are the more the most talented team in this league. And I don't think any of us can truly argue that. They are the most talented team in the league. And let's bring in now, speaking of talent, and a little late calling in, but let's bring him in now. Willie Rowe, newest member of the Pro Football Hall of Fame, 11-time Pro Bowler. Willie, how are you?
How you doing today?
Doing well. And let's get right to it, Willie. I mean, you look at it now, and we're going to go to the NBA. We've been talking NBA right now, so let's go to the NBA. Jeremy Lin, Thursday night, the Heat really dogged him, really got into his head, I think, as well. 1-for-13, 8 points, 8 turnovers, 3 assists. Did we see the blueprint to stop Jeremy Lin?
Yeah, well, I think you saw, I mean, they pressed him, the guards got after him and took the ball from him. I mean, the kid's been playing a lot of minutes. He's been playing hard. Well, we're not going to make excuses, but, you know, everybody's saying the same thing. He's been playing above his head, Paul, Jeremy, and, you know, he's going to come back to earth, but I do think he's going to be a quality NBA player. He's going to be good, but you got some real good guards in this league, and Lee is big and strong. The next thing he's going to have to work on is you know, not just penetrating and dishing and doing the stuff he does, but, you know, he's going to be able to hurt guards with a post-up game because he's bigger than a lot of guards. So when he learns how to have a little post-up game and you know, keep working on that, stopping and popping on that mid-range jump shot instead of going all the way to the cup, he's still going to be hell to deal with in the future. He's just going to have to work on other facets of his game, and it's going to take a little time.
And I would agree with you on the whole Jeremy Lin thing. I mean, he's been playing some very good, really good basketball, and we'll see what happens with him moving forward. But that might be the blueprint. Put, you know, some athletic guards, quick guards on him, and see what happens. And Chalmers and the Miami Heat were able, and the Miami Heat, they defend, and so that's one of the better defensive teams in the league. So I mean, I don't know how much we can read into this game. But you might have to say that there may be a blueprint there. Maybe. I mean, but we'll see moving forward. And, Willie, you got the NFL Combine going on right now. And you went to the Combine many, many years ago. But looking at the Combine, how intimidating is this whole thing for players, especially young guys now preparing and trying to get into the NFL?
I mean, you know, for me, it wasn't intimidating. I mean, I was prepared. I was one of those guys that needed to go to the combine and have a good showing, coming from a smaller school, and I wanted to go up there and put on a good show. Now, you know, I benched 225 like 20 sometimes, 224 times. I didn't have a great showing there, but as far as the broad jump, the 40-yard dash, all those drills, I did real well at. And Lincoln Kennedy, you know, I had a problem with his hand and other things, and he didn't work out at the combine. And you had other guys, Curry and Copeland, who I played against at Alabama, and they didn't work out at the combine. They went to Alabama. But for me, coming from a smaller school, it was important for me to go up there and put on a good show. And I played about 295 my senior year, so I think I was about 305 at the combine, and I clocked like a 4.9, something on one of my 40s and like a 5.0 something on the other one. So, you know, when I went to the combine, I was just going out there working out like I've been doing.
What's your 40 time now?
I still can run pretty fast now.
Paul,
if you want, hey Paul, I tell you what, Paul, we can get out and run sometime. I still can run pretty fast. I don't know if I can run a 5 flat, but I'm not too slow, Paul.
Well, Willie, I got to be honest with you. I don't think you're faster than me, and you know.
We can find this out one day. I got the other way right over here. She can tell you I'm still in pretty good shape.
Well,
Paul, you were in high school track. Oh, all right, Paul, but Paul, don't think I can't run no more.
Well, I think you would have a problem with being a racer. I think I would.
Well, how far distance though? I'm not going to race you more than 40, 50 yards.
Yeah.
We could do a sprint, you know what I mean? I mean
that's what we're going to have to do. We wouldn't do it fast. I wouldn't race you more than 50, 100 yards. I'm not going to run you to 200. I'm going to run you about 50 yards or 50 yards.
We go to a field. We go to midfield to the end zone.
Whatever you want, but yeah, if you used to run track now, Paul, that, I mean, I'm like, come on. What was your race, though? See, now you're not telling me.
Yeah, but I mean, I wouldn't call myself, you know, a big-time runner. I wouldn't call myself a big-time track runner. I mean, and I'm not in the type of shape that I was then, unfortunately. But,
okay, Paul, we're cracking. If you don't think I can run anymore, then, you know, we can go to a field and run sometime. I have no problem with that.
Well, one of these days, we'll
bang! There we go.
We have a lot of contests, you know. And then I'm still on my steak dinner by Jeremy. Then you know we got a running contest going on. I mean, you know, we have a lot of contests. Another thing too, Paul, I want to tell you guys, you know, the Saints have they've said they want to play in the Hall of Fame game. So they just announced that they wanted to go. So the Saints will be playing in the Hall of Fame game. So it's gonna be some more pressure on me to deliver a pretty good speech because they just volunteered to go.
Okay. So you definitely have to lay it down.
It's gonna be maybe a little crazy with those two games. And then they start the Hall of Fame ceremony in August, and the Super Bowl is in New Orleans. So it's gonna be a big year for the Hoodats.
Definitely is. And like you said, I mean, Jeremy does owe you a steak dinner. And, you know, being a guy, I'm going to hold Jeremy down and make sure that, you know, I'll beat you in the race. And, you know, if I win the race, that steak dinner is no more.
If you win the race, that steak dinner is no more. I need to know how fast, you know, what do you think you're running the 40 right now?
Well, I mean, I really don't know, to be honest with you.
Do you think you run a 5 flat?
I think I could. I think I could run a 5 flat.
Oh my goodness, Paul! Come on, you're almost 15 years away from high school. I really think
only 15 years away. How old are you, Paul?
I'm 36.
Well, Paul, I'm 42. I'm gonna be 42 years old this year. I'm also 5-6 years older than you.
True. But
I mean, I'm not a spring chicken, Paul.
But at the same time, you're not a spring chicken, but you are a world class professional athlete.
And I played 13 years.
Right.
Okay. I still think I can run with you though. I still think I might be able to get you.
I think you would have a problem. I think you would have a little.
Okay,
bit of a problem.
Okay, Paul. We'll find out.
I mean, I'm a guy, you know, I have a lot of confidence in my quickness and my speed and my ability to get off to a good start and finish a race the way it needs to be finished, and I think you would have some issues with my ability. But we'll see. We shall see.
Since we got, but you know, Paul, you know I was fast. You know, I was one of those guys that was faster on the football field than in the 40. You know, the 40 at the combine is deceiving, you know. It's just a slow. It was a real slow track because it was that old turf, so it was real slow. Now, when I was a junior, about 2:85, my redshirt junior year, I ran a 4.82, 4.82, 4.82, and my strength coach Joe Taylor will be at the Hall of Fame ceremony, and he will tell you he clocked me on grass at 4.8. Now, I mean, it wasn't an official clock, but I mean, I was really. That was one thing that I was very good at. I was very, very fast for a big guy.
And I mean, obviously, you know, you obviously put a lot of years in the NFL, and obviously you're a Hall of Famer, so you're a fast man, obviously, for your size. You
well, I was, yeah, but I mean, that was 5-6 years ago, Paul. Maybe I can't run in now either.
Well, I mean, it's been a while. I mean, I definitely have put on the pounds. Since then, I'm not the same guy, you know, athletic-wise.
Well, Paul, if you don't have a quick burst, then you might be in a little bit of trouble. I'm just going to tell you.
Well, I'm a better finisher than I am a starter.
Oh, you are? But you're going to have to catch me in 40 yards, 40, 50 yards. You got to catch me if I take off on you.
I could definitely. I don't think I would have a problem
with
that.
Well, this is nothing against you. And for Paul to put up my stakes for me means a lot. That does mean a lot to me. But I would say this, Will. I will gladly pay those stakes if you whoop him in a race, because I will never let him forget that. Because you don't understand, this was Al Bundy's son in high school. He lived for high school track. I mean, and obviously, as you're seeing, he still does. And that laughter that he's trying to hold back. So for you to do that for me, Willie, I'll put up your end of the bargain.
Okay, we have a deal. We have a lot of new scenarios and side deals going on right now. So, you know, it's going to be very interesting. But I would tell Paul, I would just warn Paul, if he really wants to do this, then he needs to start working out a little bit. Because I go to the gym and do a lot of cardio, and I do a little working out, I lift weights. So, Paul, I'm not a gym rat. But I'm in the gym 3 or 4 times a week doing an hour of cardio. So I'm just letting you know this. I don't just sit around. I don't work, so I go work out. So
well,
I'm just warning you, dude. I'm not out of shape like that. I work out.
Oh, I will say this. And looking at, you know, the things that you've done in terms of, you said you bench pressed about 225 about 22 times. You know, my heyday, I was able to bench press 225 about 10 times.
Paul, I still go work out with 225, 275, 10, 15 times, man. You can't lift with
it. Here, stop, Willie. You're being – this is – I'm telling you right now, this is a gray zone for you. This man is very much like Jerry Sandusky. He is perverse. He loves to relive a time in his life that was 4 years.
Jeremy, he can't lift with me now. We know that.
I'm trying to tell you.
How about this?
That no man should do. He is trying. You're a Hall of Fame, NFL Hall of Fame.
Okay, but does he want
to
lift with me?
No,
Paul, you said you want
to
lift with me, too?
I won't let him, Willie. You will kill this man. I'm going to be
how
like
many
Paul, do you want to lift with me, too?
Before I answer that, Willie, how many times can you bench press 225 at this point?
Right now?
Yeah.
I do 6 or 15 at 225. I probably can do 225 more than I did at the combine.
Can I
I'm not 23 no more, Paul. I'm still strong.
I'll pass on that one.
I mean, I can incline with you. I'm not a squatter. I wasn't a leg guy. Man. See, I'm not going to get underneath no squat where I can do more than. I never squatted more than 500 times, Paul, Jeremy. I'm not a leg guy. But upper body, I'm still strong. I was a leg press, leg extension, leg curl. Belt squat, but I wasn't no squatter. I was an upper body guy. I used to power clean. I don't do that anymore. But I still bench and incline and all that. You know, I can do that.
Let me stop because Paul, you just raised it. I want to, and it'll be a quick question, quick answer. So you just mentioned you're not a big leg guy. Do you think that really helped you throughout your career with your mobility, not having any issues with your back and your knees, and how fast you were off the ball? Was that big for you?
That was it for me. I was just naturally fast, but I'm saying in college I power clean and snatch. That helped me a lot, but I never was a squat guy. I wasn't going to put no 400, 500 pounds on my back. Nuh-uh. That wasn't my thing. I was explosive and I was real good upper body strength. You know, good. I mean, I bench 450 in college. The linebacker that got drafted in the fourth round, Myron Baker, beat me benching by five pounds in college. I think he benched like 460. I never benched those 500 pounds. But what I'm saying is, you know, I just was already I was naturally strong, but I wasn't a big squat guy. Now I wasn't squat. We did belt squats when I first got in the league, and for a little time period in New Orleans, we got some coaches that made us do a little bit of power cleaning, but. No, I wasn't a big leg guy. After I hurt my knee and when I got to Kansas City, I was just doing leg press, leg extension, leg curl, and doing your upper body lifting. And during the season, you maintain lifting anyway. You're not lifting a bunch of heavy weight.
Well, I will say this. I mean, I will not challenge you in terms of weightlifting. I mean, I think that...
We will go to the gym and work out, too. When I see you guys, we'll go work out, too. We can go to the gym and work out. I have no problem with that also.
You don't have to challenge me,
Paul, but I will prove to you I can bench 225 at least 20 times.
Willie, you have nothing to prove
to
this man.
No, but I like competition too, Jeremy. I like competition. So we will go to the gym and lift. And so far, I can still lift.
Compete with a real person. This is a fraud. You're not competing with a real person.
Well,
I'm not sure
you're a fraud.
God.
This was a guy. This is a guy talking about myself and about 2-3 years ago. This was a guy who maxed out at 300 pounds on the bench press. So this is a guy who's not he's not a slouch. Now, am I in that type of shape at this point in my life? No. Kids, wife, all those things.
Do you lift, Paul? Do you go to the gym and lift?
I don't do any lifting.
Do you run? Do you go do any cardio?
I don't run, but here's the thing.
You just go get off the couch and you don't work out and you go beat me doing some exercise? Yeah. And I don't think it's going to happen.
Here's the
did
thing. I'm
watch,
a guy.
Really,
I'm a type of guy
Children?
That. You,
Willie,
the
you
last thing I feel.
Al Bundy was sitting on the couch watching TV, screaming.
The last thing that's going to leave me is my speed. That's the last thing that's going to leave me. That is the last thing that's going to leave me. That's the one thing that's always been, that's always protected me.
I'm warning you, Paul. Before you get in the competitive state with me, you better make sure you're doing some type of working out.
This is a Hall of Fame athlete, Paul.
I plan on seeing you in August. So, with that being said, this is February 25th.
Okay.
So, you know what? I'm going to put in the time. I'm going to put in the effort. I'm getting off the couch now, and I'm going
to. Well,
you need
to get off the couch anyway, Paul. Work up, man. You got to have a little stamina, man.
That's true. But I'm going to get off the couch, and I'm going to come August. I'm going to prove. I'm going to get. You know what? And last year,
we will have time to go to a track. At some point in August, we will have time to go to a track, and we will have time to do a few drills. And we are going to talk about it on the show. So we're going to talk about it.
Really, we're videotaping this. I tell you what, we will win. Not that $100,000 to Willie is a lot of money. We'll put this on America's Funniest Videos because this shit will make some money. This man is challenging a Hall of Fame athlete. I can attest to this right now. At Paul's day, he was very quick. This man, Willie, somehow, something happened to him about 2 or 3 years ago. He may be a mass murderer because it looks like he ate a person. His face looks like a balloon. His belly looks like Santa Claus. This man is Al Bundy.
I'm not going to say that. You're kind of exaggerating, but I'll say this. You know, once I put a wedding ring on, you know, the opportunities to work out and do all the necessary things to stay in shape, you know, I didn't, those opportunities.
How far is the closest gym to your house?
I got a treadmill.
Come on, Paul. Hey, Paul, if you don't want to work out at your house all the time, you still can go to the gym. I have an elliptical in here, the Cybex form elliptical. I have one of those in my house, you know, with no arms. But if you don't want to work out in the basement, just go to the gym and get motivated. You'll see people in there
you don't
want to
work
get motivated.
Out,
well, here's the motivation I have now. We're at February 25th. Come. And I'm looking at August. I'm looking at my calendar. That gives me about, 4 or 5 months. Not only am I going to be quicker and faster, I'm going to bring sexy back. And so come August.
I my mouth, Paul.
Come August.
Bring sexy back to the – you better bring it back bring the sexy back to the Hall of Fame ceremony. You better bring the sexy back.
Sexy will be in the building. Now, I don't think I can outlift you.
No, you can't outlift me. You know that. You remember on the Lineman Challenge in 1996, Paul, during the Super Bowl, we had to run those drills and stuff, and I did like 385 on the incline, and I beat Warren Sapp. Did you remember that?
I don't remember that, but.
Yeah, we were partying all night, and I did 385 on the incline bench.
Well, I mean, then that's impressive. You know, but you know what? Here's what I'm going to do. Maybe I can make it even more impressive. Maybe I'll stay up the whole night before, and then I'll race you. You know, maybe I'll do that. Maybe I'll do it.
Hey, Paul, you better get your rest, Paul. Paul, you better get your rest. I'm telling you, you better get your rest or you want to race me. You better get your rest. You better get your rest or you try to get on a race with me.
I'm begging you, please. You have to at some point have sympathy for this man.
I'm not going to have sympathy for him because he's 5 years younger than me. I can't have sympathy for him. I'll be 42 years old in 2 months. How can I have sympathy for him?
Sad. Paul, you are sad. I'm going to ask you.
Paul, if I beat you now, it's going to look bad, but I'm going to beat you regardless. You got to let a 42-year-old six year out of the league ex athlete beat you running down the field.
You know, you're a competitive guy, and I'm a competitive guy myself.
Okay, you better get to working out. I'll tell you that.
One thing I love to do is compete. So
you
I'm not working out, Paul.
All y'all Philadelphia fans want to sit there and talk about all these guys playing ball, but y'all sitting on y'all couch with the remote in your hand. You better get to working out.
Exactly. That's Al Bundy.
The remote will be put down, you know, and in its place will be a treadmill. You know, and I will be, you know, spending time on the treadmill. Come August, I will be in the type of shape I want to be. I will be have the type of speed I will have want to have. And, you know, so, you know, speed has been something that's been my friend. You know, it's been my friend. You know, second to my wife. It's speed has been my mistress.
You better work on your burst, too.
Well, and I will. I mean, I'm a guy that's going to be able to get off the line quickly, and I will be able to beat you down the field. I'm very confident in my belief that I can make this happen. Confident in my belief.
Okay.
You know, this is not tough talk or any of that. I'm just
really confident in my ability to be able to run.
And beat a man 6 years older than me and a man that's a lot bigger than me. There's no way that I can lose that race. There's no way I will let myself lose that race. No way.
Go ahead and talk yourself into it.
I mean, I think I'm a guy. When in shape, and that's the key. When in shape, there is no way I will lose a race to Willie Rofe.
Okay, go ahead and talk yourself into it then. That's good.
There's no way that's going to happen. I'm a guy with the type of ability, the type of speed that I have. I cannot.
Now, Willie, do you know that he, in an intramural, let me run down Paul's resume for you. Willie, we know all about you, pro bowler, Hall of Famer. This is a man, this is what he did in his athletic career. He ran high school track, nothing accomplished. He then led an intramural band of nitwits, and Paul was the leading scorer in one game. So that is him, his curriculum.
And what, you talking about in basketball?
You're talking about 28 points in that game, if you want to know.
28 points, Paul.
Okay, well, Paul, we had an intramural red shirt freshman team, and we went all the way to the finals, football players, and it was all red shirt freshmen in the intramural league, and we played the three-point boys, and we had to run heels before the game, and it was me, I was the main scorer, and a point guard named Corey Parham, who was a receiver. That's who we went inside out. We were the ones who did all the scoring. We went to the intramural finals when I was in college, and we got beat. But the strip coach Joe Taylor made us run heels before the game.
So maybe that's what I need to do before I play in basketball too. Maybe I'll run the hills, and then it's just to make it even more impressive.
Well, I don't play basketball on a regular basis, but I know I can run.
We'll see. I mean, I think you're gonna have a problem with my speed. I really do. And, you know, being a guy.
How tall are you, Paul?
I'm about 5'8".
Five eight.
Paul, you couldn't even shoot over me, man. I wouldn't even be comfortable. How are you going to shoot over me in basketball?
Speed.
He thinks he has speed. Can I explain to you, we almost lost.
Paul, you're going to let a guy six years, you're 5'8", I'm about 6'5", and I beat you running, it's going to be real, real bad.
That's why I'm not gonna let it happen. You're right. I mean, everything you're saying is right. That's why I'm not gonna let it happen. I refuse to let something like that happen.
I hear you, Paul.
Refuse.
He sounds like really. If you didn't know what I'm telling you about this man, if you just listen to him on the radio, does he not sound? He sounds like a preacher. He's preaching to you. You sound better after listening to him. But I can assure you. Let me bring you back to reality. I can assure you, all what he's talking is hot. It's just air. It's helium. As soon as you press the balloon, this goes. It's done. Goodbye. He doesn't know what he's talking about. He's delusional.
And Paul, on a little bit of a serious note, I did make I did make a call to Jason Whitlock about this stuff, and what I was told about Iverson was Reebok did set a lot aside from him, and he did get some of that when he was playing early, and when I said deferred money, he said, well, you know, guys could take loans against the money that they deferred. If you did do that, they couldn't take money against the money that was deferred.
Right. So he's Allen Iverson denies that he's broke, but I mean, we had Stephen A. Smith on the show, and he wouldn't say that he's broke. He wouldn't say it. Even if he was broke, Stephen A. Smith said on the show that he would not say that he was broke. He wouldn't say it. So, I mean, a lot of people are – I think, you know, just judging by the way he lived, just judging by how, you know, his entourage and the amount of people that he supported, I mean, I think – I wouldn't be surprised if he's broke. I hope he's not broke.
Obviously, he didn't have all them people around him no more, right? Correct?
That I'm not sure about. That I'm not sure. I would hope not, because there's really not much there, as much. But, I mean, you never know. I mean,
well, what I heard was Reebok put money aside for him, but what really hurt him, the gambling situation was a big problem for him, and like a lot of guys.
They were talking that he had some issues with gambling and also issues with alcohol as well. So that kind of, I mean, and like you say, gambling, that can really affect your pockets and take money away from you and your family. And so, I mean, hopefully there is some money there for him. Hopefully he has something. Because you, again, you
yeah, hopefully he has some assets or some money that he can liquefy. And if he cuts back and he stops doing some things, then he can liquefy some assets and be able to sustain, taking care of his kids. The main thing in the entourage, the main thing is making sure his kids are okay.
Right, and you figure, the one thing about gambling, I mean, if he doesn't get that issue taken care of, no matter how much money he has, he's going to ultimately lose it. So he's going to have to get that some of those vices taken care of moving forward for him. And you look at him, and unfortunately, I don't think he will get another opportunity. I'm hoping that he gets another opportunity, but I'll be shocked if he gets another opportunity. And I just don't think he's proven that he refuses to come off the bench, even though he says he will now. But it's just too late. Looking at him when he played with the Sixers last year, he did lose us a little bit of a step. He did lose a step. He's not the same player.
And I couldn't believe Greg Ostertag tried to come back and play last year.
His
38.
Knees didn't hold up.
Yeah, knees didn't hold up.
Right, and so – and then you had Iverson, who had some issues with the tendonitis in the knee and everything. So you don't know, you know, if he can do it. But I think he has lost a step. He lost a step. And watching him last year, he lost a step. 2 years ago, I should say, he lost a step.
What happened to your Philadelphia 76ers? They've been on a little tailspin lately.
The Sixers are a team right now. Let's be honest. No one expected the Sixers to be 20-9. As they were at one point during the season. No one expected that. No one expected the Sixers to be on top of the Atlantic Division, and they are right now, but no one expected that. So right now, to me, this is all gravy, because in a lot of ways I didn't expect it. And you look at it, this is a team that needs that number one guy. They don't have a number one guy. Andre Iguodala is not
well,
a
Andre,
one
you
guy.
Would think Andre Iguodala would be the one to step up, but, you know, every time they play the Miami Heat, he disappears. It's like he's not even there.
It's not a good matchup for the Sixers. The Miami Heat is an awful matchup for the Sixers.
Iguodala is such a great athlete. You would think by now, at this point in his career, he would be able to step up, shoot the jump shot, and do more stuff. I mean, you can't ask the young boy to do it. You got Mo, you got Drew Holiday, but you got the guy Evan Turner. But you would think Andre Iguodala would be the one who would be stepping up, being a more of a closer by now.
You would, and he has not stepped up, and he just doesn't have the handle, and the jump shot is erratic, too erratic for him to be that closer, to be that step up guy, to be that number one guy. And I don't think he ever will be. He's a good number two, number three type of player on a good team, but he's number three player on a good team. I don't think he is a number one guy, and I think he's proven that right now throughout the course of this season. And Willie, before we let you go, real quickly now, I want to get your thoughts quickly on this Brady Quinn, Tim Tebow thing. Brady Quinn said in a GQ interview that there was a lot of luck involved with Tim Tebow and his whole situation and his success. Some of it was luck and everything. What is your thoughts on that?
I agree with that. I mean, some of those games we watched, we talked about during the year. Tim Tebow was, it's like the defenses were clamping down on him, and then like the end of the game, he just ran different coverages. I mean, I didn't understand what they were doing some of those games. I mean, you let this guy, you clamp him up the whole game. You know, some of the times when he took off running and made some great runs, I can accept that. But when you start changing up your coverages and covering the guy one on one. You know, when you've been running zone the whole game, I didn't understand what some of the teams were doing against him last year.
And, Willie, you know, I've said this, and I'm going to say it now. Unless he becomes essentially the unicorn, which is unknown to human mankind, NFL teams, you just said it. You run a zone on this guy. You spy him. Unless he can become a quarterback, you know, and also I said to Paul earlier, what Brady Quinn said, the only thing he should have said is, I'm not taking anything away from his leadership. I'm not taking anything away from what we were able to do. It was run wild. The book on this guy, and we said it all season, he's a great player, but he got lucky. The team just bought into him, and a lot of times, and you saw it with the Steelers, the first play of overtime, they showed absolutely no respect for their ability to throw the ball. They had not one person 5 yards off the ball. And so what that means is in the next year, you don't think the Steelers are going to do that again if they get to a playoff game?
I don't think they're going to do that. And like you said, Tim Tebow, the thing about Tim Tebow, he's tough as nails. And if you made a mistake against him, he picked you apart. And then later in the year, some of those times, if you made a mistake in the passing game and we're going to play him one-on-one, he'll pick you apart. So I will say this, and I respect the fact that he's out there working with that coach at UCLA twice a day, working on his throwing mechanics. And we'll see what happens this year. But I mean, with his ability to get out the pocket and move around, he's always going to be effective at that, and he can run the ball. But, you know, he knows he's got to learn how to throw the ball more down the field and throw the ball before a guy breaks out a route and read those defenses. So he will get better. I think he'll get better at that. But it was a lot of luck because some of the time those defenses were like they were just lining up and letting him, throw the ball where he wanted to throw it.
And we'll have to leave it at that. Willie, we appreciate you stopping by, sir. Greatly appreciate it as always. And we'll do it again.
We'll do it again next week.
All right.
All right.
You can listen to this show and other shows at blogtalkradio.com/pgan, where you can listen to this show and other shows. This is Go Forward Overtime, so you're going to make sure you listen to this on the podcast at blogtalkradio.com/pgan. For everybody here at Go Forward, Jeremy, ESPN, and all of us, have a great week. See you later. Bye.